Hey, Spittin' Chiclets listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What does it take to become a NASCAR legend? Generations of victory?
One of the great masters of the sport.
Motor oil in your veins? Does it take irrational confidence?
Tony Stewart wins!
A little bit of last lap magic? What about fandom that runs in the family? A track where every mile becomes a memory? Or maybe it's simply knowing that new legacies are built one lap at a time. NASCAR Legends, presented by Geico at Talladega, Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Fox.
This episode is brought to you by Body Armor Zero Sugar. The brand new Zero Sugar sports drink from our friends at Body Armor provides real hydration with no artificial sweeteners, flavors, or dyes. And whether you're looking to stay hydrated or recovering from a long weekend, Body Armor Zero Sugar has got you covered. With great tasting flavors like fruit punch and lemon lime. Available in stores nationwide, head on over to Body Armor Store on Amazon and get yours today.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 274 of Spittin' Chiclets, presented by Pink Whitney from our friends at New Amsterdam Vodka here on the Barstool Sports podcast family. Even though we're on the once-a-week schedule at no pucks, we decided to say thank you to everybody who's been sticking by us during these hockey-free times and drop a little surprise Monday episode for you. Hopefully everybody digs it, but let's say hi to the gang first. Producer Mikey Granelli, dressed in pink like a couple other people here.
Gentlemen, you guys look fantastic. RA, Biz, guys look great. Don't know if I can say the same about Whitney. He's not in his pink wit sweatshirt, but guys, I'm doing great right now. Got a little sunburn, and I'm ready to go today.
Nice. I got a little color, too. You can't really tell. Next up, Biz Nasty. We'll go to you, Paul Biz. Now, we're going to the pink sweatshirt committee first. We got to Paul, describe what's going on here.
I signed on, and G was wearing his pink Whitney tie-dye. So was I, because I was a little chilly in my office. Check it out.
Hey, looks phenomenal,
not
actually,
bad,
dude.
Not bad. I decorated it. I got a nice little banister coming here soon. I'm not going to say what. It's going to be a surprise. But then RA comes in size on as he's got his pink Whitney pink tie-dye shirt on. And then we were saying no fucking way that Whit's going to come over. But he does have his nice golf attire. And it is great to stop by. We love you guys. You mean more to us than you know. Like, you know, this gives me – something to look forward to every week, and now twice a week this week, because you know it was Witt's great idea that we needed to treat the fans.
And last but not least, Ryan Whitney, the Witt dog. What's up, buddy?
What's going on, guys? So all three of you have mentioned that I don't have the pink sweatshirt on, that there was no memo to wear, so you can all fuck right off. I'm rocking Peter Millar pink Whitney. Check it
how
out
are
the
Barstool
Sport, the store. And Biz, office is coming great. The banister's gonna look phenomenal. I actually am getting an office. I find that she gave me one of the rooms. She gave me a room upstairs. So I'm gonna hire somebody. I'm gonna have them come in and just decorate the shit out of it. I actually have like maybe my Olympic silver medal jersey and medal. Maybe that'll hang up. And yeah, you could say second place is for losers, but how many do you have Olympic medals? So suck on that. What else is going on? Yeah, and Biz says this was my idea. So if you want to hear what really happened, Biz said, guys, I think we should release an episode Monday. You know, it's been crazy times. We had the episode a week or two ago that had to happen. And I said right away, fuck off, Biz. Come on. This is our vacation right now. There's no hockey. We're gonna be getting rolling. And he actually laid it out on the line. He put it down and he proved why he's the leader. And he said, dude, we're number one. You want to stay at number one? You continue to give content to the fans and you never let up and you don't get satisfied. And I do get satisfied because I got a lot to be satisfied about, but I appreciate you for being yourself and getting us on here tonight. Cause now I'm happy that we're shooting the shit.
Play a coach, Biz Nasty. No doubt about it.
I got Cornelia.
Yeah, it's Dunlop.
Hey, I have Granelli on an Adderall and Red Bull diet. He doesn't get to sleep because he's got to edit YouTube videos and fucking get those out too. Which, by the way, quick plug here. We just dropped Jamal Mares, who we had earlier this season in Chicago. That was when we got Kirby Dock. Who else? Duncan Teeth. Who else did we get?
Nello Ferreira. Adrian Acoin.
Adrian Acoin. Jeez, name dropper. Watch your toes. And then about 30 minutes before we jumped on here, JVR. We got him when we were in Philadelphia when Gritty fucking sprayed me with that shit and ruined my jacket. By the way, that was a $500 jacket, Gritty. You are a piece of trash. But you know what? NHL Fan Choice Awards, he didn't win best mascot. Chance from Vegas did. So suck it, Gritty.
And before we go any further, I've said it once, I've said it twice, but this is now going to be Chicklets Meme's best work in what he did with RA's beginning last week. RA, I'm still convinced you were on a massive amount of cocaine. I know Death Wish Coffee's legit, but that was the craziest. When I re-listened, I re-listened to that clip on Memes 15 times and had tears coming down my, because you go from like, and when you go, my buddy's buddy, buddy, and then Biz says, oh, you got a buddy?
Well, once you started both interrupting me, then I was just discombobulated. My
I loved it.
Off the track, and then I didn't even know what the fuck I was saying anymore.
Yeah.
I don't think that was just so good. And then the work he did, phenomenal. So
Death
I've
Wish
said phenomenal twice already.
Off.
No, the gist of the real long story short, it was basically, I put on a movie. As a result of putting on a movie, I ended up getting in touch with an old friend I hadn't talked to in years.
Okay.
That was
yeah. There we go.
I got the short. That's all.
All right.
That's all.
Great work. We'll get
to the Death Wish a little bit.
How are you doing, RA? It's great to see you.
I'm doing fine, man. We're still not completely open here in Boston. I mean, you can go out and hit a couple patios or whatever, but I'm fine. I got no complaints, brother. Life is good.
All right,
life is
buddy.
Good. And we got a doubleheader today for the folks, Biz. We did an AMA on Twitch about a week and a half ago. We know some of our listeners might have caught, but not all of you did. So we're going to drop some of those questions in a little bit. And we also have Pittsburgh Penguin Patrick Marleau as well, likely a future Hall of Famer. So we'll be bringing him on a little bit. What do you got, Biz?
Well, the word memorabilia got brought up. I think you said it when you mentioned your silver medal wit just now. And we actually got asked that in that chat. So this AMA was just the fans jumping on our Twitch stream, asking us questions. And RA, I mean, like, it looked like you had a blast.
Yeah, it was, man. Well, I hadn't done any Twitch stuff yet, so when I jumped on and Whit was a little late, it was good. I love that shit. It's something different. I mean, we obviously love talking hockey here, but sometimes it's good to mix it up and find out different interests and funny stories.
Because we
all have interesting backgrounds.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I got put on the spot because I ended up mentioning all this memorabilia that I assembled like through winning things, and then you realize although Whit made all the money on this podcast, he's a fucking loser. He didn't have one trophy.
Biz, you have three sticks in your ghetto fucking office that you're in right now, and they were the three sticks you used like your whole 7-year pro career, because you never broke sticks, because you never touched
them. I love it. You are in a mood today.
Take it out of my headspace right now.
Actually, before we get to the AMA, I gotta ask you about I noticed Jordan Spieth was in the running this week. It looked like he found his game a little bit, and I know that he was a big name in golf that kind of fallen off a little bit.
Yeah, he had a tough final round. But more importantly, I'll talk about my golf for a second. I have been playing the best golf of my life, no doubt about it.
The
last 3 weeks, like, I'm down to a legit 0.0. Are you shitting me? Now, can I play to that every day? I don't think so. But it's good timing, because tomorrow morning, which will be Monday, I have a tee time to get to the Mass Am. And you remember last year how I got in. Ooh. So I got the other round tomorrow, or now today when you're listening to this. Here's the thing. Tough news. 7:14 a.m. tee time.
Pardon?
Pardon is right. I think I'm getting up at 4:30. And then, yeah, you could say I'm crazy. But you know what the thing is? My body takes 2 hours to feel normal. Every morning, you know, these bones, these aches, these pains, it's tough being me. And when you put your life and your body on the line for 12 years pro in Sweden, Russia, and North America,
warrior.
It's like, what are you supposed to do to get ready to play golf besides wake up, maybe go for a little walk? So we'll see how I play. Today I hit a couple hooks, but I played on Friday at this beautiful, beautiful golf course in Rhode Island, Wanamoisett. Everyone who knows golf knows it. The thing's – it's incredible. So the member, this kid, Josh Padua, I think I'm saying it right. My friend is buddies with this kid, so he brought me. We're on the 12th hole. Hold on. We're on the 12th hole. I'm taking a picture of this beautiful uphill par 3. It's 200 yards. Unbelievable hole. And the member's hitting, and he hits a shot right at the pin. He hits a 6-iron rocket right at the pin. I'm like, that fucking thing could be in. Legit, throwing right at it. I step up, and I stripe. I took a little more club. I hit a 5-iron. It's right at the pin. That could be in. right? They're both right at the pin. I bomb up above the green. There's one ball about 3 feet away. And then I look, and there's one ball in the hole. And guess whose it wasn't? Me. But congratulations, Josh, the member, his first hole-in-one at his home track, Juan Amoyset. An unbelievable shot. I ran down to him. He thought I was messing with him. I'm like, I would never fuck around with that unless I'm talking to my grandfather. And after that, it was just all downhill. Him and his partner pounded us, lost like $300, I think. And it was great to see a hole-in-one, but I was that close. I missed the birdie putt, too. Suck on that, Whit. So,
well,
yeah, that's golf. Spieth is struggling in the final rounds and on the weekend, Biz.
Well, I was going to hop in there and say it's good to know I won't be having to carry us in the sandbaggers moving forward, considering you found your game.
You carried us for like four holes in one of them.
Yeah, no, I mean, still carried. And RA, before you you hop in there, maybe the USGA, maybe they're going to hire that same guy that got hired in Happy Gilmore. You will not make this putt, you jackass, because of everything you slandered them about on our podcast.
Wait, who?
Because you said you're going to that tournament tomorrow. Remember how you like complained to the board about?
No, that was the USGA. This is the MGA, the Massachusetts. Oh no, it's not. It's Mass Golf Links, Massachusetts Golf. Oh, a little different than the USGA.
Oh Jesus!
And by the way, I will take all that back. If all those qualifiers get canceled, then the field next year, this year gets into next year, I take it all back.
Okay, my bad. I thought it was. I didn't know there was different cults.
Yeah, there's different cults. There's different wagons. There's different groups. I mean, it is, Biz. It's like you. It's like all the different aspects of your life. You got like your ad department. You got your decorating of your ghetto office department. You got your above ground pool department. And you got your had a goatee for like 7 years department.
Oh my goodness! You are fucking.
Bro, you had like a flavor saver. You had a flavor saver for a while.
Buddy, I had it all. I had all the worst of the fats. Hey, when I was in grade six RA, you know those big ass Janko jeans?
Oh God, yeah, the ones at PMT here. Yeah. PMT.
One that PMT. See, yeah. I used to wear those.
Oh my!
I used to wear those, man. Hey, Whit's about to kick me off the fucking podcast.
Did I tell the story of how I got the free shoes from Reebok when I was in fifth grade?
No,
fourth grade. So. Our neighbor, John Morgan, unreal guy. He was a big dog at Reebok. And so he'd get a pair of shoes a day or a pair of shoes a week. It was insane because at that time, I think size 9, someone at home shaking their head because there is a size that is like the trial size where in which they make this one size. I think it was 9 and I was a monster in fourth grade. So every pair of shoes he'd bring to my house, I'd have to wear, right? Out of respect, he's giving you free shoes, Ryan. You're going to wear those shoes at least once. And one day he came and his wife, Gwen, dropped off a pair of red ones, bright red Ronald McDonald Reeboks. And I'm thinking right away, thanks a lot. I'm like, fuck no, they can't keep this rule going. You don't have to wear each pair once. You can't do this to me. Well, sure as shit, 5-6 days go by and my mom says, hey, you haven't worn the red shoes yet that the Morgans gave you. You got to wear them tomorrow. I said, Mom, please, no. I'm going to get tortured. Please, no. She says, you're wearing the shoes tomorrow. So sure as shit, I throw on my khakis, my Dockers, and maybe my my sweater. I head to school, and I'm nervous from the minute I'm at the bus stop. Some kid at the bus stop says something, and he was a nerd. So he was a complete nerd. I knew I was screwed. I get to school, and there is, I mean, it's kindergarten through fifth grade at Cushing Elementary in Scituate, Massachusetts. How many kids in a grade are there? Like 60? So 300 kids, I was getting made fun of by 190 of them, including there was a kindergartner. It was like, nice shoes. I was in fourth grade. So I got made fun of so bad, I went to the office and I faked sick. I said I threw up, which I didn't. And I said, I need to go home. What do you know? My mom said, I'm not picking you up. I know you're not sick. You got the red shoes on and you're getting made fun of. Deal with it. And I stood there and I sat there all day while all these people shit on me for my red shoes. And I'll never forget it. I got home and I threw them in the closet. Yelled, never again. No word of a lie.
Did you ever get hooked up with the Reebok pumps?
That was a journey, man. That was a journey.
Did you ever get the Reebok pumps?
Oh, I had the pumps. I wore those forever. This was the sickest hookup. It was awesome, but the one time the Reds came and my mom made me wear every pair, it was not awesome. Put it that way.
Yeah, Reeboks were huge back in the day.
I don't know why I thought that was so funny, but that was amazing.
I don't think it was. It was more like I'm kind of twitching now remembering that day. That probably made me such a miserable prick.
You sent us that picture, you class clown. What grade was that from?
Oh, that was eighth grade. That's another funny story. I got all the funny ones tonight, fellas. Eighth grade graduation, so middle school graduation at Noble and Greenough. Beautiful prep school, Dedham, Massachusetts. I think it's probably where I'd send my kids. Or Thayer. So I'm going to Thayer. Eighth grade's ending. I'm leaving school. And I was kind of rattled, but it was still, I'd made a lot of good friends. I was just there 1 year, and my dad comes up with my mom for middle school grad, and they give you the yearbooks, and he sees I'm class clown. I'm like, oh, I got class clown, unreal, unreal. We get in the car. He explodes on me. I thought I told this before. I pay all this money. You got a class clown. I got the class clown as my son. You're the class fucking clown. And I was like, oh, my God, I thought that was awesome. And it was just the worst ride home ever. I'll never forget it.
My father would have taken me to Suffolk Downs if I wouldn't have
so mad. I was like, oh, man. And it's funny because my mom found the thing the other day. I sent you the picture. And I said, you know what? Oh. Being class clown worked out pretty fucking good, didn't it? Because look at me now. I'm just on a podcast talking nonsense. I think that's pretty clownish if you ask me, Biz.
Oh, you are on fuego. He's heating up. Since we were on the bad trends, bad haircuts, I used to have a rat tail.
Oh, dude, there was a kid rat tails are disgusting. You're one of the kids who cut it off and saved it. It's probably still in a shoebox at home. There were people who saved those rat tails, dude.
Hey, I had a front one where my whole head was shaved, and I just had, like, hair in the front bangs. Buddy, if I got my elementary
one little spot?
Like basically, like, probably, the, like, 2 to 3 inches in width and a half an inch back.
Oh,
and it,
my God. Everything else was shaved like it is now?
Everything else was shaved.
Oh, so
I bought.
So your parents never, like, I couldn't have gotten that haircut. Like, were there no rules for you at the barbershop? All right, you know what I'm saying? Did you, like, could you have gotten any haircut you wanted with your parents?
I mean, there was nothing really wild. I mean, my hair didn't do what it wanted to. I mean, I'd go and say, oh, spike it, but I'd have to put, like, mousse and shit in it. But basically, I'd get a whiffle. I mean, the only thing I couldn't come home with was a mohawk. That's probably the only thing.
I had a mohawk, obviously, when I was fighting in Wilkes-Barre. Like, I've had every single haircut known to man. The only thing I haven't done is, like, shave the complete top and do, like, a skullet like R.A.
I got detention
in
high school.
R.A.'s just grew in. It just never grew in on the top. It's always been the sidesy backy.
I had those stripes in my head. I got detention for in high school, like that Brian Bosworth used to have back in the day. But that was about it.
Those came back, too. I think Kane brought those
Yeah,
back.
Dana had
R.A.'s, R.A.'s grade school pictures. He's got the sides he's back.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, I can hear you backstage. Oh, there you are.
There you are. What's up, buddy?
Well, it's a little odd because normally it's you coming in first with hello, everybody. Not bad.
No, not too shabby. Not too shabby. It'll work, but we can coach it. We can coach you up.
La, 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 la. We're used to having Witt off the hop here. Of course, Witt being the diva is a little bit late. Oh, Grinnelli just Houdini'd there.
Whitney Houston.
We were going to put the Chicklets Cup on hold, guys. It's, you know, we never have really gotten to do this, an AMA. Normally, they're done on Reddit, right, RA?
You thought it was a sex thing, didn't you, Biz? Admit it.
It does sound very Bondish. Is that the word? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, there could be an S&M quality to it. Never done one, so I'm pretty excited to do one. I'm glad we have moderators, though.
What, you're talking about the AMA or the S&M?
Hey, I'm down for anything. A couple more of these.
So this is great. Like, we never really get to have fans ask us questions. Witt's going to hop on here very soon. But, you know, we need you guys just as much as you need us, if that's even the case. So this is going to be fun. We'll snap it around. Hopefully there's a lot of hockey questions, and then maybe some really, really random ones for RA, because that's when things can get real fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm down for anything. You know my rule. Just no family, no friends like that. Anything else, fuck yeah. I'll answer anything. I like this shit.
Hey, it's funny how we actually wore the same hat.
Well, I actually had my Oakland A's hat on, but it's so fucking hot here. It's a wool hat. I was sweating my nuggets off, so I had to switch to the mesh. Dude, I could grow a mullet right now. Look at my hair.
Hey, you should do a skullet for – could you?
Dude,
could
I could do an Ally Afraidy right now.
Yeah, okay.
Smoke butts between periods.
Actually, you know what? Since I already led off with one, and it was like a East Coast League version of a hello, can we get one from the OG?
Sure. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the first ever Spittin' Chiclets AMA with me, Biz, a little bit tardy wit, and our boy Grinnelli is backstage doing the moderating. Hopefully we get a good crowd tonight. It's nice to see some people on the comments already. They're not being too many peckerheads on there, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, guys, this isn't meant for be anything other than like hockey questions and having a good time. I have a girlfriend now, and I'm at a different stage in my life, so those old stories are for the old times. I'm trying to get a little bit more mature in my. It took me a little while, RA.
Yeah, it's all right. It took me a while.
35 years to mature up. So let's get the first question going here. Where is it? It's up on the board.
Right there.
I'll read it because this is a short. This is a short enough sentence, so I don't mess it up.
Can't cancel my 8:30.
How do you think the Leafs are going to do under the new playoff format? Oh my god, I almost messed that one up. I'll let you answer that one, RA.
How are the Leafs going to do under the new? I don't think the new playoff format is going to affect any one team more or less than the other. I think it's just going to come out and it's going to be who wants it more, especially now more than ever with no fans there. If it's an empty rink, it's just going to be who plays better and who wants it more. So the Leafs don't have any advantage or disadvantage in this new format. Like
really? I think the complete opposite, and I actually think there's an advantage for the Leafs, and this is why I think so. When they come back, normally progressive throughout a season, the reffing kind of gets, I would say, a little looser and looser, right? At the start of the year, a lot of penalties being called because they want to enforce all the rules, and as you get the playoff time, it's a little more physical, a little bit more holding, clutching and grabbing. With the reboot, I think they're going to call it much like the start of the season, and I think given the fact that Leafs are kind of like a high-flying offensive-type team, that they're going to benefit in the fact that it's not only being called a lot, you know, tighter because more power play special teams, but also that the fact that earlier in the season, it's a little bit more like pond hockey. You know, when you always saw that one guy in training camp where you're like, oh my God, this guy's going to have 40 this year. And all of a sudden the physicality comes into play more and more and they disappear. I think that for the Leafs, it'll be a nice entryway and to get some playoff exposure for these young guys. And who knows, they might even go on a little run.
Yeah. I remember those training camps. Well, baby, I'll tell you. All right, next up, I'll read this one. Would you rather be trapped in a cage with a tiger for 10 minutes or eat nothing but peanut butter for a year?
Oh, peanut butter. That's like an awful question.
Yeah, I mean, would you rather risk a fucking hungry tiger mauling you to death or eat peanut butter, nothing but peanut butter for a year?
Here, actually, a spinoff question from that. Arian Foster thought that he could beat up a wolf, or he still thinks he can. Did you remember the tweet that ended up going viral?
Yeah.
I didn't think it was that crazy given it's life or death. A wolf's not a tiger, right?
No, a wolf is a dog.
No, I'm saying is like as far as on the toughness scale.
Not even close.
So I think that it's just like it'd be like a dog on steroids, a wolf. Is that a good comparison?
That's basically what a wolf is. It's a dog. Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah, maybe a couple key tokes too, but you know, like they get that, like that, the wires cross to like a different level, but I don't think he was off base with that one. So I kind of spun that terrible question into an even worse one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure a man has probably killed a wolf before with his bare hands.
Okay, do we have another one?
Oh, RA, would you rather give up your favorite food or listen to Biz Reed's statements for 24 hours straight?
Who wrote that question? RA submitted that as his own question.
I don't know this person. Nicholas Ross, would I rather give up my favorite food or listen to Biz Reed's statements?
You won't offend me, RA.
I know that. I can't give up pizza. I mean, this is not going to happen. Pizza's my favorite food. I love Biz. I could just bring a bunch of J's with me and I can listen to Biz for 24 hours, but much rather do that than eat pizza. I mean, I have no more pizza for the next 30 to 50 years, however long I'm going to live.
What would be worse, listening to me do ad reads or in a room trapped listening to Cotton Eye Joe? Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from?
And you had to dance like the whole time. Like, yeah. Fucking off.
24 hours straight.
Holy shit.
What else do we got? Oh, this is a long one. I'll let you take this one. Is this, Trevor looks like RA a little bit.
Not right now with this mop on my head. All right. Trevor Nettleton, do you think the current playoff format takes away from the intensity and passion that is usually seen in playoffs? Who wants to say they won the cup in 2020, the year that shouldn't have been? We'll go to you, Biz.
Well, I disagree. It's a very unique circumstance. So if anything, you know, in the future saying, oh, remember 2020, and everyone's going to say yes.
Fuck yeah. What happened then?
Yes. We won the Stanley Cup that year. I think as far as the intensity is concerned, my question mark was the fans just add that much pressure, at least for me anyway. And they kind of create that tension more so. So in order to get it to the level of without the fans in the arena to where it would be with them, I don't know. I have a hard time believing it's going to get there. And that's not taken away from the players either. I just, man, like when the fans are all screaming, 20,000 of them, man, your heart rate just jumps. And I was the one on the bench, not even alone out on the ice. So yes, I think it's going to affect the intensity.
Yeah, we talked about it on the show. I think I raised it with you, Biz. Is like, you know, there's no one there. I think, like I said, it's going to separate the wheat from the chaff or the chafe from as far as who's competitive and who's less competitive. Not that no one's not competitive. So it's probably a concern as to who wants to say they won the cup in 2020. Listen, whoever wins the 2020 cup or whenever the fuck they play it is still going to have to win 16 playoff games in the NHL. It takes away nothing as far as I'm concerned. We don't talk about the lockout in 95 when the Devils won. We don't talk about the lockout year in 13 when the Blackhawks won. They're a dynasty. No one ever says, no, they're an asterisk because they only played fucking 40. No, people forgot there were lockouts those years. No one ever says that. So they're not going to, especially this year, they played fucking 60-something games. So not a concern. Next up.
First of all, Trevor, great question. And to spin off of that, and we're also going to talk about this on the podcast because I'm interested to hear Witt's opinion. Strahlman just mentioned the fact about, you know, maybe players not necessarily wanting to come back for whatever reason it may be, safety, at the fact that they're like, ugh, let's just go from a clean slate next year. Maybe they're not even interested in the fact that they can recoup some of that revenue and they care more about being with their families. So me saying I'm optimistic and wanting it to come back comes from a place of a fan. If majority of those guys were like, hey, no, it's their lives. It's their decision. And if they don't care about the money, it's like, I can go find other things to entertain me. As far as like the hardcore fans are concerned, if they voice their frustration, I don't know. I've never been in that situation. I'm not a jock sniffer like RA. I'm just kidding. I'm a wicked jock sniffer.
I love it. Believe me, I got a lot of shit when Bettman had the press conference to confirm everything. And I literally finished a blog 20 minutes before that. I wasn't timing it for that. And I said, hey, hockey's not back yet. We got a long way to go. And Devan Dubnyk raised the same concerns as Strahlman did, especially for Europeans. Those guys have to come over and miss their families for, you know, not everyone's going to bring their family over from Europe. That's a big fucking deal. So, of course we want it. I mean, and it seems like the NHL is intent on having the playoffs whenever they can and then just rebooting the schedule from there. And, hey, if that's what it takes, so be it. All right, next up we have Polish-Canadian 87. Hey, RA, how did you and Ryan connect to start podcast? Who suggested making it bigger and more widespread? I love this answer I'll give you. Okay. I met Witt through mutual friends at a bar in town a couple times. Our buddy Brett owned a bar near North Station. We bumped into each other. He was a longtime stool. He read my stuff. I obviously followed him in the NHL. And we weren't like buddies texting or whatever. We would bump into each other, have a beer, shoot the shit. Very good, casual, fun relationship. And after he got back from Russia, he sent out that tweet. It was, I want to say, December 15th, 2015. And he said, hey, Biz, I'm thinking of starting one of these podcasts. Talk about trending topics and this and that and hockey, whatever. And you said, I'm still playing for a couple more years. And I replied. I said, oh, a partner, eh? And kind of half joking, but like half serious.
Shoot your shot, buddy.
Fucking right, brother. Within 5-10 minutes, Witt slid into my DMs. He's like, you serious, RA? I says, serious as a heart attack. He says, do you know how to start a podcast? I says, I'll learn. And he says, let's do it. That was a week before Christmas. By the Super Bowl, we had our first episode out. February 16, we were chugging along. We were like two SoundCloud rappers, Wayne's World, whatever you want to call it, on the couch every week and fucking having fun. And then, you know, I knew the audio had issues in one episode. we would go rolling, man. We were like fucking Abbott and Costello. Shout out, all the kids will have to Google that one. We were killing each other. And I looked over to hit pause, and the fucking thing died. I was like, oh, no. What? He's like, what do you mean? I goes, dude, it didn't record it because we didn't have a producer on site to say, hey, what happened? The mixer I had shit the bed. I says, hey, you know what, dude? I got an email from this kid from Burlington just last night. I usually don't save them, but this kid was local, and I did. That kid's name was Mike Grinnelli. Another person who shot his shot, and my mixer literally died the next fucking day the mixer died. So we're chugging along. Not long after that, Portnoy, hey Dave, he says I listen to your podcast, which you almost shit my pants because he's not a hockey guy. He goes, it's good, we want to add you to the roster. So boom, me and Witt, we took off. And here's the analogy I use, and I'll end with this. Me and Witt won a title. We got to number one on iTunes, all that, and then we brought Biz along. And Biz made us a dynasty. That's the way.
Get facts. The Canai brands out.
No, really. Hey. I mean, you brought us to the level that we never. Me and Witt didn't have that vision. You did, and here we are.
Somebody asked a question online that kind of ties into this. What brought you into journalism?
A lifetime of curiosity, I guess. I was a newspaper reader since I was like. Not even 5-6 years old. I was just always a curious kid. And it's funny. I didn't go to college to major in it. I took intro to journalism. I fell into that. And one of my roommates was the co-editor. Actually, both my roommates were co-editors of the paper. And one of them said, I'm going to make you the editor next semester. I was like, dude, I just took the class. He's like, I'm telling you. And he kind of groomed me for it. And I was the editor of the college paper my sophomore year. And then I thought I was going to have a journalism career. And then, of course, the internet fucking murdered everything when we were in college. And then there were no jobs. And I was just, you know, trying to get him here, trying to get him there. I started writing with Barstool in 07 and then the podcast. And, you know, it took a long time, man. It was no plan. There's no master plan to get where I got. I can't tell you do A, B, C, and D. I just followed my instincts. And it took a while to find professional success, but it's fucking rewarding when it comes.
And it's a good example for anyone who's watching, who's still kind of like, oh, you know, should I do this? Like, how do I become successful at it? Just dive into it.
Yeah. Nothing happens if you don't do it.
We tried out, you know, you try out the. Oh, hello. Hello. Hello.
Thank you for joining us.
What's up, guys? Oh, did I miss the memo on the NBD hat?
No, that would have been awful if you showed up. We would look like a team.
I would have immediately signed off. That would have been the end of the first AMA that we're doing. Where's Grinnelli at?
Wait, your first. Oh, he just popped in to say hi. There he is.
What's up, buddy?
Hey,
Witt dog.
Off the top, who's winning in a 100-meter sprint out of us four?
You, easily. Are you kidding me?
Oh, no, sorry. The question was, who in the NHL currently? I don't know, but did you guys see Waino in the 100-meter sprint when he went? Who did he go against?
Oh, yeah, he dusted, like, Pele.
Yeah, they were, like, in their 40s when they did that.
It might have been McEnroe.
Okay, so... So
yeah, but Ari's still dusting these guys who ran for a living, and he's out on his wheels. Like, Gretzky shouldn't even have to run if he doesn't want to.
So, who is I? Oh, so I was talking to Ray Whitney recently, and he was talking about Gretzky.
The Wizard?
And he said the one thing about Gretzky is he's underrated fast, but what he would do is he would beat you with his first three steps, and then he would just skate the same pace. So he would never really burn out. He was such an intelligent player that way, and I mean, it made a lot of sense. I just never had those first three steps either. So,
who's okay. Reading? Where are the questions? Who are those going to?
Just on the bottom there. If you just
It's in the purple there on the bottom of the screen.
I see.
So RA told his perspective of how the whole podcast started when you sent out that original tweet, and he said that you know you guys had been pals for so long that he just you know slid right into your DMs and it all happened.
You said we were pals for so long.
You believe all of that?
Did you just tee me up there, man?
Oh, yeah. I'm gliding sinker.
I will say, RA, we met the one time at North Star. Shout out North Star, no longer around. And we did a good talk. I had read your stuff reading Barstool, but then I say all the time, once I sent the tweet out, Biz, you weren't around. And then RA, you messaged me, let's do it. I was just like, okay. And I look back. I think I'm the only person that would just, without even like having a beer or lunch, just start a pod with somebody else. So hey, it worked out.
I got a question for you before we get to this really good one. How many times when it was the original podcast, or even when G jumped on board, how many times did you go to RA's place to record and he slept in?
That's twice. RA.
Twice.
Second. I don't remember. I remember the one time because I just was dead to the world. When was the second time?
I remember hammering on your door and calling you nonstop. And you're at the point as the caller where, to me, Biz, tell me if you know what I'm saying. You know he's not answering, but you just want there to be like 700 missed calls to show how many times. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I remember thinking, I'm like, I snapped it around in the NHL for 10 years, and now I'm doing this, and this guy can't even wake up. Like, dude, I'm a piece of shit.
What time was it?
11:30.
Dude, he's like, this is unacceptable. He was like a principal yelling at me.
Okay.
I don't remember the second time.
What happened was, because it's like we had talked. It's so funny that the second time, Grinnelli, was when you had your new Scotty Cameron that you were showing me.
Yep.
And I'm like, I don't care what the fuck, it's Scotty Cameron right now. Where is RA?
Yep.
See, I thought I woke up late one time and we got it. I'll defer to you two, but I know the one time I definitely slept through
it.
Can
we do a documentary? If we do the podcast for 5 more years, can we do a documentary at the end?
Sure. But we have to answer fan questions while doing an AMA.
No caller ID. I get these no caller IDs. Anytime we do Chicklets Cup every Friday and Tuesday night, and now we're on this stream, I'm getting a no caller ID. If I answer it,
Answer it.
Hello? No one. Stop calling me. And you can't block it.
Okay, this is a great question.
Only when I sign on, I think somebody's doing it and blocking. Now they just won. But still.
Let me ask you this question. Of all the interviews you've done with Spit and Chicklets, what was the most entertaining and why? And I'll start off by answering this. And I think that Tim Stapleton's too easy of an answer.
I know.
I'm going to say Sanderson. To hear firsthand what it was like playing against the Bob Uhrs and the generation before I never got to see Bob Uhr in his prime. And, you know, he played with them and he just dove into these stories. He was elaborating. He clearly had lived a very similar lifestyle to the way I did at the NHL level, but even more so. And he's open. He was calling them at-bats.
I think immediately you said, hey, I'm going to reuse that. I'll give you credit, but I'm going to reuse that.
Hey, yoink. What about you, RA?
Yeah, Tim Stapleton is such the obvious answer because it was so riotously funny and you know, it was the funniest episode we ever did. So we'll say we won't use that one. But, God, there's so fucking many of them. You know, Ronnie McLean was very entertaining because he'd come in that room and he'd
show me. That's a journal answer, all right, for sure.
Absolutely.
He was the master of teaching us how things work in interviews.
That's what it was. But just I remember just sitting there watching him and listening to him. And, like, he knew what we needed that day. He knew we had been working, you know, for a bit that week. And he came in and he delivered, and it was very entertaining. He was a very good storyteller. So I'm going to go with Ron McLean.
I think that two things stick out. The first, though, the number one was when we went over Keith's house and Hazy was there. And then what happened?
I got a no caller ID.
Yeah, so it's somebody now. It's somebody doing it on purpose. It must not be a bot. We just gave him the gift.
It's either Walsh
or Foley.
But yeah, Foley. Yeah, sick prank, Foley. It would more be the time I was saying we went over to Keith Yandel's. Hazy was there, and then Biz was Skyped in. And I thought that was like one of the first times, or there had been others, but where it was like Keith, my buddy growing up, Hazy and him had become best buddies. And all the times in the gym or golf course where I'm dying laughing, I was like, that was what just happened on that podcast. I don't know. When was that?
I think that was when people ask us that what is the best podcast we've ever done? I think that one might be the best. I think it's because of the answer when we're like, all right, biggest cock on the Rangers, 1, 2, 3, go. And they answered it.
We don't need to go into too much detail. There might be some kids listening.
I think we should probably give a special nomination, special nod to Biz here, because before we brought him on the show, he was our biggest hit, which is pretty much why we brought him onto the show.
That was when I was telling the crazy stories. I'm pulling it back a little bit.
Grow up, Biz. It's good.
Yeah.
Hey, the other thing was the whole West Coast Wagon Tour, because the Yandel Hayes one was hilarious. But we were still at Keith's house. Then all of a sudden we're on the road with Purcell and Bugsy, and then it was being at the All-Star game with like great access. I think that's when I was like, oh boy, this is taking off.
Somebody asked about my former coach, Mike Stuthers.
Your foreskin?
No, no, my former coach. It's just right here at the bottom. It says there. Sorry. If you just read. It's ask about my former coach, Mike Stuthers, won a Calder Cup with him. We're actually going to save that for the podcast, but it was unfortunate to see him let go. 6 years he spent with the Kings organization. We'd spent time in Manchester together, then moved to Ontario, which, I mean, segueing out of the Stuthers stuff, and we'll save it for the podcast, is that new Western division in the American Hockey League.
Oh, it's the best living in maybe the NHL.
Yeah. You purposely get sent down to go. Palm Springs is getting injected into that division, as well as Henderson, which is the town right outside of Vegas. What do they got? The Silver Foxes or something?
Henderson, Silver Knights.
Oh, okay. Silver Knights. My bad. So, and then they got San Diego in that division.
And Biz, they get mad fans there too. San Diego, I think it's 10,000 a game.
Yeah, they're nuts. So then they're at that old Coliseum too. I don't think I fought Grattan actually in that building, or maybe I did once. But either way, like they still like that old school style of play. And I mean, you get to live in San Diego.
You mean McGrattan or Josh Grattan?
No, McGrattan. Oh, McGrattan played for the San Diego Gulls.
Dude, oh yeah, that was in Ice Guardians.
Yeah, yeah. Henderson? I was asked actually to be in Ice Guardians, so I guess kind of we ramble.
You said
on
no to bit. Something.
What's that?
You said no to something.
You weren't paying them. It's a documentary.
Yep. No, there we go. Do you remember, I told you guys a story about Dean Lombardi when I called Stutzy in Futes. I said, listen, I'm in a bad spot. I said I need a place to play, and they called Dean Lombardi and he gave it the okay. And he goes, just tell him to stay the fuck off Twitter. So I really, really toned down all the social media. And then also that season, I think we only lost 11 regular season games. We were on this heater. And given the fact that I'd reached out to him, because I'd like, you know, I didn't have a team to play on, and they'd given me the opportunity, I didn't want to come in and be a distraction. I ended up being in the documentary because I fought Gallant twice. And this is a funny side story. So Gallant, who was playing in Bridgeport, we fought right away at the start of the game because he also had the camera crew following him around. So I wanted to give him one. And I got the better of the first scrap. And then he asked me again, and I thought it's because he wanted a better showing. And then I found out that was his like third time doing two scraps in a game, and he was getting a game suspension. So he didn't have to play in the back-to-back. And on the Sunday when we played our second game, he got to go fishing. So that guy got out of the game, and I had to go eat a couple of his punches.
Did he get you better in the second one?
Oh yeah, he's a tough. Wow. Him and his brother are tough customers. His brother was playing in San Jose with the Barracuda. They weren't getting any fans. There was like 200 people there.
Dude, I'll tell you, Henderson is going to crush it because it's only 20 minutes away from Vegas, and Vegas tickets, it's expensive, and that's because it's a strip. They're just strip prices, but the tickets are going to start at $10. They're going to be sold out all the time. It's going to be
huge. Yeah.
And then having to have your AHL thing down the street, that's huge for an organization. And Foley took a shot. Like, he's like, we're not going to have an orphaned stepchild here or something like that. Like, basically, it was a dig at all the other franchises.
Shots fired.
You can't. All right, what are you crushing?
He's on his like 10th
little wine and Kugels, yeah.
All right, so we might see some RA action here. About that, Biz, hell of a move, staying off Twitter. I mean, I knew you needed the contract, but it was like, that's mature of you. Did you ever write out tweets and just like almost like send them? Or you just save them, or were you just off the internet?
I'm going to be honest. It was nice to get away for a little bit because it was intense. Speaking of Twitter.
Yep.
What do you guys think about Max Kellerman's statement on Twitter? I'll let RA start because he loves going at this stuff.
You know what, Biz? A bunch of people tagged me, and I just said, don't take the bait. It's ESPN troll shit. Like, you know, I respect guys. They work. Stephen A. Smith, that's what they do. They say stupid shit to get people to watch the show, to pass the stuff around. And I don't want to be part of that. And that's why when Chief wrote the blog, don't be triggered by Max Kellerman's statement. I'm like, well, you just wrote a blog, so you obviously got triggered by it. But I love what you did. Say, hey, I'll take you to a game, make it wiggle for you. I'll buy you drinks. And I thought the way you handled it was great. But me, I'm like, whatever. I have my issues with ESPN and the NHL. I wasn't going to go there.
My one thing about sports, and like I wasn't necessarily the biggest soccer fan. Of course, the diving deterred me a little bit, and it's a little low scoring. But when you go to an experience, when I went and played over in Cardiff in the EIHL, when I was basically Sidney Crosby over there, thank you very much. I went to a Cardiff City game. And they ended up winning the second league down, and they got is it relegated? Does that mean getting bumped up?
No, relegated means you go down.
Okay, well, they went the other way. I know English isn't my first language. But it was cool. I got to go experience a game when they were on top, and like the fans are into it and they're chanting the whole time, and it's experience. So then after that, watching soccer, especially like when you're getting to like the world, the Premier League and the Champions League, there's 100,000 people, and you kind of remember the chanting, and you can only imagine how much more intense it is. So getting a live experience will make you a fan of most sports if you go and enjoy it and experience the way it should be.
Yeah, but I'm more on RA's side that I don't think he even cares. It's like a little jab he can throw. It's getting his name all over the internet or whatever, all over the hockey internet that we see. Sweet. That's a sweet crew lately. But I think that if you look and you actually see Kellerman ever say anything smart about anything but boxing, it's a miracle or someone's telling him, because they have like he's a perfect boxing guy, analyst, whatever. And then they throw him on ESPN and he just has to pretend like he knows about every sport. Like I could never go on there because I wouldn't know enough about the other sports. He'll just throw out wild clown claims and know that people get rattled by it.
And look what happened. With everyone got rattled. Now.
Although, I don't know. I guess writing the blog means Chiefs rattled, but I guess he was more trying to give the message you just gave to a large audience.
I was breaking his balls, like, obviously, because the blog was actually very well written. I love Chief. We know that. And by the way, it's called Promotion and Relegation. If you go down, you get relegated. You go up, it's getting promoted.
Promoter. Okay, thank you, Ari. Sure. Who wants to read the next one?
I think Witt should.
What's the story behind Rick from Red Deer? Did that happen organically or was that planned? It's my favorite bit you guys do. So, funny enough, Crowley's Kitten. I think this guy might be trolling because I've gotten a lot of give up the Rick from Red Deer shtick. People get sick of
it. We don't do shticks.
I've heard from a couple people, shticks. I'm talking about a fan that has to plug his car in at night because it's freezing up there, just getting rattled. So, I would say that it happened by us, what, talking about the Battle of Alberta? And then I think we were talking, we were saying something incorrect. We had no clue what we were talking about, which is, you know, kind of happens quite often. And then we imagined this guy from Red Deer in my head. He popped into my head. I always thought of him as a Flames fan. People say he's an Oilers fan, but just listening and wanting hockey talk and breaking down the X's and O's. And instead, he's got us just talking about like The Bachelor or something on TV or RA's favorite Simpson episode. And there he was born. So I don't think it's a shtick one bit.
No, you pulled it off the top of your head. You just like Rick from Red Deer. We all started dying laughing and that was it, man.
Red Deer has diehard hockey fans, Biz. You know that.
Oh, yeah. What else we got? We got another one?
That was Crowley's Kitten, by the way, who asked about Rick from Red Deer.
Crowley's Kitten.
Little shout out.
Who's the girl? Oh, Carol Baskin.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they
said got the prison. Not the prison. Well, the prison for the zoo animals. She got the zoo. She got Joe Exotic Zoo in like a lawsuit or something.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. And then the sheriff's come out and said that her dead husband's name was forged on the document that got her all that property. So
stop starting rumors, RA. What moment did you fall in love with the game of hockey?
You want to go first, one of you guys?
Go ahead, Whit.
I wouldn't remember the exact moment. Anything in my memory is just I was obsessed with hockey from the first time I remember anything. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't remember anything before kindergarten, and even then I remember some things. My memory's bizarre. I can remember every single golf shot someone hits, but I can't remember what I was told to get at the store when I'm sent down by my wife. So I don't know when I fell in love with hockey. I just was always obsessed with it. So you're the loser, Biz.
I know. I would say I originally fell in love with hockey. And keep in mind, my mom used to bring me to like skate when I was like, I mean, the videos, I must have been two. I was just walking on the ice, like, and you're, I didn't even have the chair, but you had like the double blades. And when I started playing house league, I got bumped up really quick because I was naturally good. The only time I was ever somewhat decent at my level. So I remember them bumping me up, and that kind of that positive reinforcement, like I felt that I was really good at something, just kind of initially made me fall in love with it. And, you know, I stuck with it and, you know, there was a few bumps along the road, but it was probably right from that house league mark around the age of like 5 or 6. And from then on, I mean, I really fell in love with it when I got that Wayne Gretzky aluminum stick underneath my couch for Christmas the one year.
The silver one?
I think I got the gold one, but maybe it was silver. I have the photo on my phone, but we were all done opening our presents and, you know, I was happy, and my dad was like, what's that under the couch? And my mom was like, yeah, I think I see something.
Same thing.
And I went under there, and like right away you grab it, and you're like, oh, my God, there's no way, and it's in wrapping, and then you unwrap it. And they caught the moment probably on – I don't know what camera they had at the time. They don't got them like these days. They caught the moment when I kind of looked at it and looked back at them, and boom, snap. And
that picture's been – you've had that picture on the internet, right?
Like, yeah.
That's been out there. It's an unreal one.
Yeah, and that was like the OG. That was like the first time there was ever a two-piece stick like that, and it was that. That's when I kind of ramped up even higher.
It's probably one of those old VCR things that, like, basically you're like a newsman out there putting your shoulder and shit. I fell in love with hockey in utero, like when I was in my mother's stomach, because legit, my mother and father had season tickets for the 71-72 season, and well, I was conceived in August of 71. So from that whole season, I basically gestated in my mother as they went to every single Bruins game during the 71-72 season. They actually won the cup down in Madison Square Garden that year. But the three games they played in Boston, my mother was at all those games 9-plus months pregnant with me. So I was fully formed in the garden at these fucking games because I couldn't skate for shit. I've acknowledged that. So when I come out, it was just always Bruins, man. I don't ever remember not having the Bruins in my life, like being a little kid watching them on TV. It was just born into it. I mean, literally, like, from the womb, born into being Bruins fans, a Bruins family, always watching them. So I say I fell in love as an embryo.
That's a great answer, all right.
Thank you.
She had the game call. She had the headphones on her tummy so you could listen in.
She was gassing beers and ripping fucking heaters back then.
Oh, come on.
70s, they didn't give a fuck.
If you could live in any U.S. city other than the one you're currently in.
Ooh.
Wait, if you could, I'm pretending like I can't see it because I messed up the sentence.
Where you're,
if you could live in any U.S. city other than your current one, where you're living and why? Where are you living and why?
It means where are you living?
Is that poor sentence structure or sentence structure or bad reading?
No, it's
a little bit of both.
Okay, thanks.
Should have been able to figure that one out. But what's yours, Ari? I don't know yet.
Shit, this is one of those. If 20 years ago, it'd be a different answer. But like if I had to pack up and move right now, I'd want to be near the water, because when you grow up in Boston, you need to be near the water. So I know you guys would probably laugh, but probably Sarasota. Like that's a good spot, Florida.
Laugh. I mean, it was Panama Beach or Sarasota. It works out perfect.
Probably Sarasota. It's not the, I mean, it's a good happening place. It's kind of quiet. Your Tampa's right there. It's a good spot. If not that, maybe Nashville. Nashville's a fucking awesome city.
Yes, Nashville's sick. Biz, what about you?
Anywhere in the world, I'd probably live in Victoria, British Columbia.
U.S.
Oh, it has to be in U.S. Then it would probably be Denver, as opposed to
Denver.
Scottsdale is unbelievable and was ranked, I think, number one city to be in while quarantine. Just given like everything, the weather, like 9 months of the year, it's perfect. It is cooking right now, but I think Denver, just given, you know, you got the mountains where you can go hiking. Oh, did we lose RA? Was my answer that bad? Did he leave us? I'd say Denver. I think that's a good answer. No, Whit?
RA just remembered that he brought home a huge thing of edibles from Denver one time. He's like, oh, I knew I left those in the closet. He just ripped away to get them.
Yeah, it's like, how to get through hip-hop security.
Been 2 years and he couldn't remember until he heard the word Denver.
Well, that and all the drugs that I ingest are easy to get in Colorado, so that's why I want to go there.
Yeah, so, I mean, I love Jupiter, Florida, but I wouldn't want to be there all summer. I'd have to be able to go somewhere in the summer. It's too hot. So, year-round, any other U.S. city? This is tough. Chicago or San Diego?
Chicago or San Diego?
Dude, I was going to say San Diego's got to be the answer. I've never been there.
I'm not someone that I mean, I like to golf, but I don't mind like some bad months, a couple. Especially if you can get away.
You like the grind?
I love it. I love it there.
All right, what's the next one?
This Scottsdale's up there. Scottsdale's
that might be a call.
Craziest coaches Biz and Wits have ever had. I mean,
crazy.
I don't want to say crazy, but Stuthers was, it was intense, and that's why I love them. And the accountability, I think that's transferred over into my everyday life, where you know, being a grown up, you have to be more and more and more accountable. And I think that's why sports are so important. And to put you, like, I'm going to put my kids in a sport just so they can, you know, not only learn the accountability, but the teamwork and the camaraderie. And so I'd say Stuthers was the most intense. Like the funny thing about Stutzy is, like, he, you know, we were in junior and we'd be watching video and he'd have the laser pointer out and he'd stop it. And he'd be like, you know, in front of the whole room. So it was a no holds bar roast fest every time we were doing video, which was comical. Most guys would be in their jerseys like this until it was their turn. And then they'd be like, oh, poor me. I turned it over and got yelled at.
I feel like when you're younger, the coaches are crazier. I wonder if that's still the same. I think it's probably starting to switch, but Parker at BU, Jack Parker, legendary coach. He had a temper. He would snap sometimes. I remember like hallway treatment, because you could drag the guys off the bench at Walter Brown Arena and kind of like down the runway to the locker room, and he just dragged me down there. He's like screaming in my face. I remember that. It was great. It's like made you play better, I thought. Now, if you did it like all the time, it was ridiculous, but it wasn't like that. It was only like very occasionally. But one time he was so mad. We were up at Cornell getting smoked. And they had like a rivalry from back like in the 70s, Cornell and BU. And they're pounding us. Their team was sick. And he comes in, he's screaming at us. I've never seen anything like it. And his face started getting like red and purple, and he was a little older at the time. And the trainer, Larry, went over, he's like, Jack, it was like, the older you get, you start realizing like you can't continue to get as mad as you're getting. So he definitely chilled out a little bit after that. His later years, they won a national title, but he was nuts once in a while, but a legend.
All right, I guess you can't answer that one.
Yeah, I'm thinking my basketball coach in high school, my baseball coach. Biz, you're probably the closest I've had to a coach in the last 30 years. I would say more than anybody. And I know, I mean that in a good way. Yeah. Actually, quick funny story. I sucked at baseball.
This is the craziest coach.
My team was so desperate for players. Like, my principal's like, Brian, you want to play baseball? I'm like, Mr. Kale, I'm terrible. He's like, I don't have a glove. He's like, I'll get you a glove. I was like, oh, they really need players. So I played baseball. Like, I wasn't a starter. I was off the bench. And it was like one day I got on base. I think I walked and no one gave me a signal. No one told me nothing. I just said, fuck it, I'm going to steal a base. So I somehow miraculously stole second. Then the inning ended and the coach, he was an old guy. He's like, what did you do that for? I was like, I don't know. I just felt like, he's like, he took me out of the game. And that was the fucking last time I played baseball.
Oh, no.
Hey, one lifetime throwing days. Watch out, Ricky Henderson.
I think the coach is right. I think the coach is right in that situation.
Absolutely. Fuck.
I'm kidding. What do we got here? What school would Biz pick if you could go back and go to college route? What program would Witt play for if he went major junior? I would. Do you want to answer it first?
London Knights, get paid absolute cake. And
you can't say that anymore. You can't say that. We're not talking about the London Knights.
Fair enough. London.
You don't make those jokes.
What a city, and your team just pounds everyone else in the OHL.
Oh, man.
Biz, Arizona State has a team now.
Well, I know, but they didn't back then. I'd have to go back. I think the first team, and really the only team, because I was going major junior the whole time. I knew I was going top two rounds. Come on.
This is a major junior guy. Can you tell?
OHL guy here.
OHL guy here.
I think Notre Dame was something that I would have considered. I don't even think I got any official letters, but I think that they came up at some point. And, you know, that's a pretty good school. I mean, if I wasn't going to make pro, to have that type of education would be awesome. But yeah, if it was now, ASU for sure. And their program, and once they get their new arena here, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
What's the closest QMJ Quebec Major Junior? Yeah, QMJHL team to Montreal. Is it Laval or is the one in?
I think there's a couple around there. Isn't there?
That's where I'd want to play.
Really, you're a Montreal guy.
Love Montreal.
Well,
love
Quebec City, yeah. Quebec City would be a cool place to play.
Yes. I've heard that's an awesome city, Biz, Quebec. I've heard nothing but awesome shit about it.
Yeah, I played in a Pee Wee tournament there in 1997.
Let's
it was the world championship. We won. South Shore Kings 83 team.
Ooh. Okay, somebody start reading the questions because I can't read anymore.
All right. How long does this thing go?
Probably another like 5-10 minutes if we can get some good questions.
All right. This one is from OB Liam 97. If you had, this is a tough one. We like it. We love everybody in the league, but if you had to move any team to a new location / city, what team would you move in? Where would you move them?
I don't mind this question. I mean, immediately you got a fan base that's going to despise you once they see me say it. But,
you go.
I'd go, move R.A. I'd move the Blues to Kansas City. No, I'm fine.
Okay.
Come on, R.A.
That's a troll job. I'm joking. Fuck, man. I mean, I know Florida's the obvious guess because they don't draw, but they're trying so hard to do the right thing out there. But it's just the arena situation sucks. And I don't know. Quebec deserves a team. I know that's the most probably obvious logical thing to say. But I mean, if I were to have to do that, what was best for the NHL? Yeah, I would probably move the Panthers to Quebec.
Yans is going to hate your guts.
Yeah. I don't know. You can go to Montreal and potty.
Man, it's actually harder than I thought.
Very difficult question on the spot.
Yeah, I think probably the Canes. I mean, they're getting better.
They're getting way better. It's not even close.
Hey.
Take it back.
No, because when they aren't good, if they aren't good again, there's just nobody there. So, I mean, you got to be really good every year to be there. So I'm not like, hey, the Canes need to move. But if you're going to ask me the question, they'd be the team. I don't know where, though. So that's what makes it difficult. That's why it proves that I actually don't mind the Canes being in Raleigh. So, Biz, don't try to put words in my mouth or cause a stir. I'll stay on as long as you want. Don't try to fuck with me. I just buried you on that.
I was Max Kellerman there.
Maxie.
However, I'll play the Stephen Smith part.
I love Stephen A. I think that guy is classic.
He's great, man. He's branded himself.
He's an entertainer.
Absolutely.
I'm having a hard time answering the question, and I could imagine some of the messages that are coming
up.
Yeah. You guys are so predictable.
But maybe just to Scottsdale, Biz.
Planet
the 50-minute drive to
Glendale. Wouldn't even consider moving AZ.
In the gonads.
I would I'm going to skip this question. I can't think of anything interesting.
Pussy.
I'll come back to it. I'm dressed like one, all right?
That's comfy, though, huh? That pink Whitney tie-dye.
All right, Matthew M., we'll go to Biz first. What's your favorite piece of memorabilia you kept from your hockey career?
True. That's a decently long list. 3-game point streak, pucks, Arizona Coyotes. Got me a little plaque because I went on a 3-game heater. No big deal. And it was actually on the Canadian road trip. It was that one where I had 2 assists in Edmonton, I believe. And I had one in Edmonton, Vancouver, and Calgary. So Rick from Red Deer was punching the steering wheel that morning. I have the game sheet for my first ever NHL game. And like Crosby and Malkin's on it, Alfredson, and it was the one that was played in the World Premier Game. So that's pretty cool. I have a gold medal from the Under 18 World Championships to go along with the Team Canada got us a ring as well. My Calder Cup ring as well. So it's hard to really put one into that category with.
Just a reminder to everyone from Biz what he's done. I mean, he's going to build a nice room for all his hardware at his new house because you have a lot of medals and rings. I didn't realize that.
Well, I mean, did you win any championships?
World Juniors? I won the Quebec Pee Wee World Championship.
That's the last time you won anything?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, let's think about it. Won the Eastern Conference? Does that count? That's a trophy.
That's a trophy. That's the
Prince of Wales.
Prince of Wales trophy.
They gave me a mini one and I lost it because I don't want that. I got second place for a golf tournament. My partner, legend Mike Riley, my buddy, he saw me just throw it away. He's like, dude, what are you doing? I don't keep second place piece of shit trophy. So, yeah, I don't have much. I have the silver medal, which actually, it feels like you win the bronze and the gold and, you know, you lose the silver. But still, looking back, it's an Olympic medal. I get that hanging up somewhere. And I have a Lidstrom stick, sandpaper finish, signed.
I obviously didn't play, but when I did sneak into the Red Wings locker room that night, I'm going to confess, I did grab a roll of tape and take it for a souvenir that night just because I knew it would never happen again. So guilty Pittsburgh police. I stole tape.
McCarty's jock strap.
No, sniffs it before big podcast.
Hey, remember how he had the what did you have signed by Pedro Martinez?
Oh, the paper from an Altoids can.
The paper from an Altoids. Hey, he took a Ziploc bag and drenched McCarty's jockstrap sweat and kept it. It's still in a Ziploc in his where he found the edibles from Denver earlier.
Dude, there's nothing sicker than going through TSA and then cleaning your fucking clothes out and finding weed in your bag that you put right through the metal detector.
I don't know about that one.
Care about that, do they?
They don't. That's when I realized they don't.
Have you ever had to shit during a game, Whit? Have you ever left the bench?
No. Nope.
There's a funny story, and you could find it on the Arizona Coyotes. Oh, oh, oh! Their team website. We did a pillow talk with Ray Whitney, and when he was playing in Carolina, he'd been eating cabbage soup or cabbage rolls. He'd been eating a lot of cabbage rolls, and he had his stomach was rumbling while they were listening to the anthem, and he thought he had a fart, and he let it out, and he just completely shit his pants. But the thing is, in the NHL, when you're on the list, you can't sub anyone out. You have to start the game. And if you start somebody who was not on the game sheet as a starter, they get kicked out of the game. So he had to take the opening shift with shit in his drawers. And then, of course, after he just went right into down the tunnel and missed for half of the first period.
The thoughts have lumps.
I believe that Daniel Paille shit his pants on a breakaway in the NHL when he was playing with the Bruins.
Literally or like figuratively?
He got a lot of breakaways.
No, I think he pooped his pants. It might have been in the NHL. Maybe it was in minor hockey, and I'm getting the stories mixed up, but we used to call him Horse, and he's from Welland, Ontario, and we all had the same coaches and stuff. So I've heard that story before. So
he's just such an awesome guy, isn't he, Biz? Paille?
Incredible guy. Incredible guy. They were huge, that fourth line that year when they won it. Now RA is going to just drool talking about the Bruins.
I need a minute.
Yeah, get the Kleenex out. What was the – I told the story on the podcast. I never did it in the course of a game or had to leave. But when I was doing my paper route when I was younger, it was a little bit away from my place because somebody had the route by my place and I wanted to do paper route and make some money. So I would have to drive my bike like a couple miles to start my route. And on the way, I'm just, putting away. And then all of a sudden I lean over, take a fart and shit my drawers. I finished the route, played through it. And for whatever reason, when I got home, I took off my underwear and I put them at the bottom of the hamper. And I never forget that night, my mom called me over and she's like,
"That is a savage."
She's like, "What are you doing here, bud? Just throw them."
Are you on drugs?
I panicked, boys. I panicked. I panicked.
Biz, how about the paper route? The big paper on Saturday. It sucked.
Wow. Yeah.
You have one for the weekend.
Listen, I did something.
Patriot Ledger was Saturday.
Oh, my bad. I was thinking the Globe or the Herald. Sorry.
And you never used to get paid to deliver the flyers either. That's what sucked.
You had to load the flyers in. Took like 30 minutes, but I'd rollerblade it. That's where I got that long stride, just the paper route.
I'll say this. The paper route initially taught me how to manage money. And once you earned it, and you remember you had to get up in the morning. I delivered, I believe, 6 a.m. So I'd be getting up at 5:45. So when you would go collect and you would earn your money, it taught you the value of a dollar. I mean, I had a job at a young age. I believe I was 10 years old.
Be thankfully not a degenerate gambler then. By the way, you mentioned Ray Whitney a couple of times tonight. The Wizard is such an awesome guy. I was very fortunate to meet him in our travels earlier this season a couple of times. And he is a fucking awesome dude. He's such a great guy.
If we were ever able to get him on the podcast, his father was the trainer and he was the stick boy for when the Oilers were in their dynasty. He's played everywhere. He's played with so many different guys that he knows everyone. He's also a smaller guy who made it in a very big man's game early on. And it was, I was talking the other night and he was talking about Theo Fleury and people don't understand that Theo Fleury paved the way for small guys. And he did so by clawing for every inch. And you know, I don't think Theo necessarily gets the respect he deserves. Is Theo in the Hall of Fame?
No, he should be, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's weird.
All right. I think this is the last one. I think G said, what is the loudest barn you guys have played in? Well, back in 72 on that time. Go ahead, Whitney.
R.A. played street hockey in an actual barn, like in Vermont, when he goes on vacation.
We want to
the loudest.
I can start off.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, Chicago was going to be one of my two answers. Chicago in playoffs when we beat them in six the one year with the Coyotes. How are you? The one game I played 1 second, got kicked out after fighting Bolig. But coming out of the tunnel when they were playing Stranglehold and the lights were off. And remember, the United Center was built for MJ. So I still believe, other than maybe Montreal, it's the one of the highest seating arenas in the NHL. Yeah. And just when you're coming out to Stranglehold, and that's when they were still in the midst of their dynasty, and it was the hottest ticket in town, it was something else. And even when I was a healthy scratch, which is a lot of the time when we'd play in Chicago, I would quickly get all my gear off, get in my gitch, and I would run around to where the Zamboni entrance, and I would always listen to the anthem there and how intense it was. And my second answer would be Vegas. They had that tragedy in Vegas, and the first ever game was against the Coyotes, and I was doing the broadcast. I couldn't hear myself think, and they established themselves as one of the loudest arenas. Now I don't go travel on the road, but I dreaded going in there because the whole time you can't focus on the broadcast because it's too loud. It's crazy. The Golden Knights have established themselves as one of the craziest fan bases.
NHL Montreal is right there too, the way the seats are. But the loudest one was the arena in Halifax for the World Juniors, 04, I think, maybe 03.
When Tutu was breathing down your neck?
Tutu ask any Upshaw was on Canada. We've talked to a bunch of guys in that game. And it was, you could not hear yourself, like you said, you couldn't hear the coaches. You couldn't hear each other like on the ice trying to talk at moments. It was so cool. And they just, I mean, you imagine being Canada and just having that like behind you. It was just, they were a train. And Russia won.
I actually have one more answer, although I feel like they've been dethroned of this. The first year Winnipeg was reintroduced into the NHL. Where'd they come from? Atlanta?
Yeah.
I was playing with the Coyotes at the time, and I would say that the first couple experiences there, those fans, and I know the arena's not very big, but that was one of the crazier ones. They've gotten a little bit, I don't want to say corporate, but a little bit of jam has came off. So that pretty much wraps it up.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to give a non-NHL game category because I've been to so many playoff Bruins games. I don't know what the fucking decibels were, but one of the loudest fucking crowds I ever heard in that building. You know Dennis Leary Witt, how he did that skating game charity years ago? And Michael J. Fox came on the ice, and he had recently been diagnosed with the Parkinson's. And he, you know, he still had some mobility, but he wasn't 100%. And he came on the ice in full gear. And honestly, it might have been the loudest fucking crowd I ever heard inside the Fleet Center, TD Garden, whatever it was called back
then. When was that?
Fuck, man. It was probably 18, 19 years ago. It was a long time ago. And I remember just like the place just fucking exploded because of the situation. And everyone loves Michael J. Fox, of course. But
the Boston Garden was I saw the Bruins beat the Canadians in game 7 at home. I don't know what year it was. Maybe it wasn't game 7 and the place was insane.
That reminded me of a story, R.A., is when Gord Downie and the Tragically Hip were doing that tour across Canada. I got a text asking me if I wanted to go to the concert. He was doing back-to-back shows in Vancouver, and I was like, well, of course.
Yeah.
And that was probably if we're talking about live experiences, that was probably one of the most, probably the coolest live experience of my life and how touching it was. He came back for two encores, and it was just the energy in the building was like nothing I'd ever experienced in my entire life. And rest in peace to Gord Downie. Tragically Hip is that's Canada to me. That's Canadian royalty.
Yeah, it's weird, man. I wasn't even familiar with them. For some reason, they just never latched on down here as much as they did up there. But, yeah, I'm familiar with that story. But I think that was the last question, boys. I just got a message from G. I think we're going to wrap it up. Big thanks to everybody who did send in a question for that AMA back about a week and a half ago on Twitch. Much appreciated. We'll be doing it again. We had a lot of fun doing it. Also want to mention, hey, most guys have tried different ways to last longer. But thinking about baseball and playoff stats doesn't always cut it. That's why the folks at Roman, an online men's health company, are changing the game with Roman Swipes. Roman Swipes are a clinically proven way to last longer in bed. They're effective, easy to use, and fast-acting. And the best part, they don't require a prescription. Roman can ship swipes to you in discreet, unmarked packaging, and each swipes packet is small enough to hide in your wallet for whenever you need it. Swipes are great. They will not transfer to your partner, so you can last longer without worrying. They're super easy to use. Just take the swipes out of the packet, swipe it on, let it dry, and you're good to go. That's it. So go to GetRoman.com/chicklets, and you can get your first month of swipes for just $5 when you choose a monthly plan. Spit it out. That's GetRoman.com/chicklets. And now we're going to send it over to Pittsburgh Penguin, Patrick Marleau. Well, our next guest is currently in his 22nd NHL season. Between regular season and playoffs, he's played in over 1,900 NHL games. He's a member of both the 500 Gold Club and the 600 Assist Club. He's the San Jose Sharks' all-time leader in games played, goals, and points. He's also played in three NHL All-Star games. And somehow he's only missed, by my count, just 31 regular season games in those 22 seasons, which is incredible. He's currently a member of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and it's a pleasure to welcome to the Spit and Chicklets podcast, Patrick Marleau.
Thanks for having me.
So, how what an intro, R.A. Holy shit. Good job. That. Good
thank
job.
You. Hey, thank you. Appreciate it.
Pretty easy, though, when you do what this guy's done. Just puts it up on the ladies' tees for you.
Yeah, I had to cut a few things, believe it or not.
Well, I was going to say you're probably leading in the clubhouse, too, for playing that long. How many times have you heard guys on the ice say, let the kids play?
A few times, yeah. Yeah.
So how do we begin?
No, I was actually going to ask you first about, because of what we're doing, everyone knows about your kids because they've been so involved when you became close with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner. So are they just running you ragged right now, street hockey, playing outside? What's the deal?
Yeah, all of that. It's especially my youngest, my five-year-old. He's right. First thing he does is ask me to go play something, whether it's shoot balls on him or go play hockey outside or golf or get in a hot tub or swimming or it's nonstop. But it's great. It's, you know, I have to keep reminding myself. You know, you're not probably going to get this opportunity to spend this much time with your family ever again. At the same time, you're trying to take advantage of it, but it can, I'm not sure you guys know, it can get a little long.
What's his best sport? Are we looking at a potential scholarship here? Save you some money because you need the help.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. They like hockey. I think I'm trying to push them into baseball so I can, you know, don't have to bundle up as much and watch them in a hockey rink. So trying to stay, put some sunscreen on instead of a parka.
I'm told that nothing beats when the kids are like little league, 11, 12, watch them play baseball. But I think the first few years is a battle when the 4-hour games start, when pitching begins.
Yeah, it's they let the kids pitch for a little bit. And then if they walk a couple batters, then the coach comes out, starts throwing them in there. And
yeah,
I don't know, sometimes it's better to leave the kid in there.
Yeah, you just wake the coach up quick and he goes and makes the switch.
Patty, so do all the teammates keep in touch on like a text thread on a daily basis? How's the communication work with all the boys?
Yeah, there's always something going on. It seems like we're pretty involved with the union and the PA, and there's always a few questions, what's going on? And I think everybody's asking a question, what's going to happen, what we're looking forward to, especially training right now. It's probably the hardest thing, and knowing how to get ready for the whatever's coming next, where when the season's going to start again. I think, you know, everybody's trying to figure out when that date's going to be.
Is there a pretty high level of frustration, or are guys coping a little better, or is it kind of vary guy to guy?
Yeah, I'd say it varies guy to guy. I think probably a lot like me. Some days you wake up, it's like, okay, groundhog. My wife laughs at me. I get out of bed every day. All right, groundhog day, let's go. Some days are better than others, that's for sure.
I was just going to actually go back to the beginning. That's kind of what we do here, especially with a guy who's played as long as you, but played junior, played in the WHL, and then, of course, you're the second overall pick the year Joe Thornton's number one overall, right?
Yeah.
So going into that season, was there a kind of a race to be had, or was it he was already sitting number one? Like, do you remember those years, especially your draft year, the nerves, and then basically your thought process throughout that season?
Yeah, no, I think it was just, you know, I was in the West and he was in the O, so yeah. Obviously there's that
OHL but. Bias for Biz.
But there's that. I think I was just trying to put myself in a good position in order to get the draft. You never know. Or I didn't know at that time, like how things would turn out. Or even the night before the draft, I was I met with San Jose, met with Dean Lombardi, and came and met all his scouting staff. And then he walked me to the elevator, and he shook my hand. He goes, "Well, if we keep the pick, we're going to take you. If not, we're going to trade it away." So, like, okay, great. So I had no idea if they were going to keep the pick and take me, or I think it was. And Joe was already pretty much a done deal. I kind of heard they were working on a contract, and that was a done deal. So, I didn't know where I was going to end up.
So you've played so long because of your wheels and how good of a skater you are. Was that from the get-go, like, right, you know, 7, 8 years old, you were always the fastest player? Or was it actually over time where you became, you know, one of the best skaters in the world?
Well, I don't know how hard it was to be the best skater in the farm community where I grew up. So.
Oh, really? Really small place where you lived when you were younger?
Yeah, really small. Yeah, like there was maybe 100 people in town. It was a farm community, so we'd have to.
Were your rides to play hockey?
Sorry,
how long were the rides to get to arenas to even play at?
Not like growing up wasn't too bad. I think it's gotten as soon as I started playing in Swift Current when I was like 12, 13, then everything practice was like you had to drive for an hour to get to Swift Current from the farm. So we do that 3 times a week, basically go in, 2 practices. And then on weekends we go for games, we get on the bus, go somewhere, or just go to Swift Current. So, now, like even those small towns, there's not enough kids to make, like we would, Anne Arroyd was where I grew up, and Vanguard was maybe 7, 8 miles away. And we would combine kids to make one team. And that would kind of happen all around, like the farming, southern Saskatchewan, to do that. Kids pool together, but they still have to go like an hour to do that. So, the farming community is dwindling a little bit as far as kids-wise, so.
Yeah, so you mentioned Swift Current. Did you go watch any Broncos games? And who were the guys you looked up to? Who were the superstars of the Western League? And who would you goo and gah over?
Yeah, it was a great time to be growing up when watching the Broncos. They won the Memorial Cup, I think it was 89. So they had players like Sakic, Sheldon Kennedy, Jeff Sanderson. You know, and that was the funny thing is like, that's all I knew. So that's all I want. I just wanted to play for the Swift Current Broncos growing up until I actually found out what the NHL was about and everything like that. So, Tyler Wright, they had so many guys that went on to play NHL, but it was, one of my favorites was a smaller defenseman, Danny Lambert. I think he played for the Nordiques for a little bit. I think he scored like 2 of the quickest goals. He dumped, he was a D-man too. And he dumped the second goal was off like a stanchion and went in, but it was like one of the quicker goals. So, they beat the Saskatoon Blades in the Memorial Cup finals. So it was pretty fun to be a fan then.
So Pat, your rookie, correct me if I'm wrong, was that the first year of entry level deals?
For my year? That's a great question. It might have been pretty. I think it was, or yeah, it was. It's definitely near the start of it because
after the Daigle.
I was gonna say Daigle cost you a shitload of money.
Yeah, Daigle got paid though.
Yeah, you can rip them if you want. It's kind of that kind of podcast. If you want to lay into him.
My memory of him is just the one ad he had when he was dressed up as all the different like a fireman, a cop, a nurse, and all this other stuff. That was pretty. That was pretty big back then.
What did you know about San Jose before you got there? Anything?
Nothing really. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know if it was going to be like a desert or sand or palm trees or beach
there's no girls and they call it Man Jose. So you brought your own, right?
Yeah. Well, I think I must have found diamond in the rough because my wife's from around this area. So,
oh, okay. So I'll just go. I'm gonna jump off the Zoom call. I'm gonna jump off the Zoom call right here. All right, see you guys, Patty. Well, great meeting you.
That's Biz for you.
There you go. No, I can't wait to hear the comments on fucking social media.
That's league known, Man Jose. Yep.
So, all right, thank you for
everybody's working in tech here. So, I mean, they're just grinding it out. They're working
bookworms. They're bookworms.
Yeah. So, a male dominated industry.
So, I got a question, right? Like, San Jose, the first few years as a team, they were just so bad. I remember Mark Recchi told me it was like, if you didn't get 3 points, you'd be furious that night. And you got there, and you never really experienced it. You made the playoffs every single year, rookie year and on. So was the fan base already as crazy and passionate then, or did it take you a couple years of making the playoffs, even though they were first-round losses? Is that what grew it to become, like, you know, one of the best home crown advantages in the league now, I think?
Yeah, I think it definitely grew throughout the years. That, I mean, you know, hockey fans, as soon as you're a hockey fan, they're all in. But definitely going and, you know, making playoffs, and that's a whole new experience for fans, right? If they haven't been in the playoffs, they don't know the excitement, the way things ramp up.
God, there's so many places to go with San Jose. I mean, you just mentioned the early parts and you know, how you guys got pretty good right away. A big component of that, and I don't know how many years you were in at the time, but getting – Joe Thornton and how shocked you must have been. And then, like, not, you know, not to carve your old teammates, but you're like, we got him for what? You know, that is pretty remarkable. And all of a sudden you guys get to another level.
Yeah, definitely. That was a huge for San Jose. I think it was huge for me personally, having him come here, just to see the way he approached the game, the way he kept pushing to get better and to just keep going each and every night. That helped me, you know, evolve my game. And obviously eventually I got to play on his wing. I was playing center for a while there before, right when he got here, but being able to play on his wing, it was so much fun going to the game. Just knowing, like, I'm going to get two or three glorious looks at scoring tonight, just being on his line.
Guaranteed.
Yeah. So I just, my job was just to be ready and put in the back of the net, and, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I got to ask you a quick one here before RA asks a big one. Is there many a times where the coach and him would get in a little bit, hey, you got to shoot this, and he's like, nope, I'm a passer. Did that actually happen in the video meetings?
It happened. I think he would just shrug it off, like, okay. These guys don't know me by now, and they don't know me.
That's unreal. Sorry, all right.
That's all right. No problem. Patrick, you turned – I think you turned 18 in your first training camp, right? Is that correct?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if 18 years old, first time in the locker room, like all kinds of veterans, who if anyone, like, kind of took you under their ropes? I mean, there weren't too many young guys on that squad.
No, there wasn't, but I had a great group to come into. I think, Gary Suter, Tony Granato, Kelly Rudy, Mike Vernon, Doug Bodger, Billy Holder, like all Bernie Nichols. I just
why are you laughing? Why are you laughing when you said those three names?
Bernie Nichols.
Got a couple stories that are coming to mind. Want to open the vault?
Yeah, I mean, these guys were great to me right away from the start. I think. Little things like, you know, rookies, you get off the bus, you're going into the hotel room, and you're getting your keys, you're about to get in the elevator, and, you know, the rookies hang back, the veterans go, and I'm pretty sure I'd never had to wait. They'd always say, hey, get in here, come with us. Same thing for dinners, like, get in here, we're going for dinner. I don't think I paid for a dinner, you know, if I did, maybe one or two the rookie dinner for sure, but yeah, they took care of me. Everybody took care of me. It was such a great group. Marty McSorley, Dodie Wood, Sean Burr. Yeah,
you played with some legends of the game.
These guys are characters, that's for sure. Yeah, there was no shortage of good times.
Can you remember your rookie party? And do you remember, like, did you have to, like, get up there and tell jokes? Or is it so long ago you can't even remember where it was?
I actually lucked out. I think, I don't know, we were in Florida, but I think we didn't get, like, a nice, expensive restaurant. We went to, like, Joe's Crab Shack or something like that. Guys were just trying to get the bill higher and higher. But I think I only paid like, you know, $1,500, $1,600. Like it wasn't.
Oh my goodness! What? Yeah. Rich get richer.
Yeah, but this was like 1984. So I mean, you got to think of inflation.
What do you got, R.A.?
Patty, you were on the team when Owen Nolan refused to take the ceremonial face-off with Queen Elizabeth. Were you not?
No, I don't remember that. I don't remember that at all.
I thought it was 2002. Yeah, for our listeners, basically, it was a ceremonial.
Was that in Vancouver?
It was in Vancouver, yes.
I vaguely remember that, yeah. So what happened?
Well, Queen Elizabeth, she was in town, so they were doing, you know, the ceremonial puck drop. And yeah. Owen, of course, you know, born in Belfast, the Irish, you know, up the wazoo. Yeah. And, you know, all the political stuff that had been going on, he refused to take part in it, which, you know, is unusual. But, of course, if you know the history there, it wasn't an unreasonable stance. So I was just curious if you remembered it or if it was any a big deal in the locker room at all. But obviously.
Yeah. Now that you say that, I do kind of remember that. So and I probably wasn't the smartest kid back then, knowing the history and all that. So I think it's I've gotten to know a little bit more over the years. But yeah, that does make a lot of sense that he wouldn't go take it.
Owen Nolan, he's from near my hometown. I think he's from Thorold, and grumpy guy, right? Is he a bit of a grumpster?
Depending on the day, yeah. I think it had a lot that had to do with Daryl being. Being our coach too. So he was, you know, he wanted you to come to the rink, you know, pissed off, ready to play. And I think, you know, a lot of guys kind of took that to heart. And, but yeah, no, Owen's, he's still here. So I see him at the rink all the time. He's coaching kids. And I don't know if he'll end up coaching my kid, but you never know. But he's doing a lot of good things around here. And I think he's probably gotten, he's a lot better now. He was always pretty good to me, so I can't say a bad thing about him.
And he pointed at Dominic Hasek's nose and said, "I'm about to snipe one bar down on you," and did it in San Jose. One of the best All-Star moments of all time. Actually, before I move on, because I'm kind of jumping around, Biz, I wanted to talk about we were mentioning old veterans, and I said Bernie Nichols, right? So I looked at his HockeyDB. You know, one year he had 70 and 80. 150 points Bernie Nichols did one season.
Oh my goodness. In the NHL?
I had no idea he had a year that big.
He's one of
five who scored 70 plus goals. And I think he's usually, it's a good trivia question.
That's a great trivia question.
Well, does he let you know? Does he tell you?
No. He's pretty good. Always loved playing cards. In the back of the bus, on the plane. I got a pretty good story about him. Like, I'm 18 years old. You know, it's a really veteran team. And show up for a morning skate, and he goes, "Hey, kid, come with me. We'll get a rub." Get it. So all he wanted to do that morning was stay off and get a rub from the – and I hear Bernie Nichols tell me what to do. All right, I'll hang out. So I went and did his thing, got a rub. I think I ended up getting scratched that night because I didn't go out for morning skate.
That's one of the 31 regular season games.
Yeah.
That was one of your regular season games that you missed because of Bernie Nichols.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Hey, that's like the story incredible. We had Ryan Reeves on, and one of the veterans had told him in one of his first few years in camp, "Hey, go in the hot tub. It's great. You loosen up." And he fell asleep or something like that. And Keith Tkachuk just buried him. But typical older guy, just he knows he's burying you, but he's going to take you for the ride. Yeah. So I want to talk Olympics, right? Because you won the gold medal in 2010, suck on that wit, 2014 in Russia. But I was kind of surprised in the 2006 team that they sent over, I think it was Torino. You were having a huge year, and you didn't make that team. Was that surprising? Like heartbreaking? Were you kind of looking to make that club before the season had even started?
Yeah, I think always every time there was Olympic season, I wanted to give myself the best shot possible to make it, and for whatever reason didn't make it that year. And by the sounds of it, I might have been okay because I can't remember what they placed or
they did not do well.
They didn't do well, but it was always interested in being on those teams and wanted to be on those teams.
Scotty, what was your initial take on Brent Burns when you first met him?
I really didn't know what to expect, but I had he came in with the huge beard like he has now, probably things would have been different, but he was great. I think coming in right away and just a great personality. I think he's got his hands in everything. He knows a little bit of everything, and when he gets into something, he just dives into it and finds out everything he can about it.
Well, I was going to ask if Mike Ricci was the handsomest teammate you've ever had.
Yeah, just ask him. Yeah,
sexiest man in San Jose, I've been told.
I thought it was he got voted Denver sexiest man, wasn't it?
Okay.
Yeah, he'd let us know about that every time we went to Colorado.
what like in the middle of the room, like right before the game, everyone's getting changed. He's like, "Boys, just a reminder. Come on."
Oh yeah.
he's a funny guy.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. He likes to have a good time, and he gets a crack. He gets a kick out of that. He loves it.
Patty, taking a look at your stats after the lockout in 05, got to specify because there's been a few of them. You posted career high in goals, assists, points. Was there something you did different in your approach to have your total go up almost 30 points? So is it the time off beneficial in some way?
Geez, that's – how many years ago was that? I don't know what it was. I think, things were going good, I think, right before the lockout too. And then for whatever reason, that was, you know, having a year off maybe helped. I don't know. But just being hungry to come back, that year that we lost would have been great to play that year and even – you know, you never know what could happen when you miss a season or throughout a season. So it would have been nice to be able to play that year.
We were interviewing Crosby, and he was talking about how each summer it gets harder and harder to, like, get your body prepared for the season in order to keep up with the game, the speed of the game right now, because it just keeps getting faster and faster and younger and younger. How hard have you found it in these last years? Because, you know, that, thankfully, because of the way you skated your entire career, you were able to play so long. But clearly, you know, you're getting to a certain age where it must be very difficult to get to where you need to play.
I think so. It can be. I enjoy working out. I enjoy doing all those things still. So I think that bodes well for me. But one thing I have changed is I usually take a lot more time off the ice, but just to stay in it. And I know guys are doing it all throughout the league where they don't take much time off the ice. They're skating throughout the summer. So I've kind of started doing that more. And I think, it kind of helps. I kind of like it. I like switching things up. So just to keep it fresh. And so that's one thing. But going with the skills coaches too, like last summer, Austin had Daryl Belfry come to Arizona to do some skills work with some guys, flew in for it. So I went and did it for a while. And, he's got me trying to do these things on the ice. I'm falling down on my ass, like left and right. And, but it's challenging. So it's trying to learn new tricks, new things, and who knows if I'm using it on the ice or not, but, it's nice at least, put the work in and try and learn something new.
You can't, you can't lose your skating legs if you just never stop skating. You continue to skate every week for the whole year. You'll feel good all the time.
Yeah, there you go.
Were you on the, no, you were definitely on the team when JR came on and told us the most insane prank of all time. Do you remember that?
I remember, I wasn't there when that happened, but I remember the story when they came back, and something you'll never forget. And the way those guys tell it, you can just picture it. And, I think it was it Torrey Mitchell or
Torrey Mitchell and Devin Setoguchi.
Yeah, Torrey Mitchell. One of them was running like through Wayne Newton's pasture with the horses, and I could just see him flying by the horses, just trucking.
They said he was still shaking at the rink the next morning.
I could imagine. Yeah, that's quite the story.
JR was a wild man, eh? What was it like playing with him?
Yeah, he was. It was kind of. Going back to like his age and my age are kind of comparable now. So you kind of see the things that he was going through, when he came here, looking for a cup and all that. So he, definitely brought a different element to our club at that time. And obviously always liked to have fun and do, you know, some crazy things. And he had lots of stories, but yeah, it was good to have him there. And guys wanted to win for him. So that, you know, kind of helped our club, you know, come together.
He also had his 500th goal there. I think it was a dump in, like hit a stanchion, Biz, or something.
It hit a stanchion, like literally behind the net and popped out off the goalie. It was pretty crazy.
He still had a class. He had a celebration like he just went end to end. It was perfect.
Hey, Patty, I know you went through some captain drama in San Jose. Do you think sometimes the C or the A matters more to people outside of the locker room than inside the locker room?
Yeah, I think so. After going through all that stuff, you know, at the time, you don't like the way things kind of, you know, having it, not having it, you know, it can take a lot, take you back.
Yeah, you're like embarrassed about it. Like,
yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I think, and then you kind of, you know, it's what people think on the outside, you know, they don't know what's going on the inside and why it's actually done or, you know, and things like that. And, if, you know, sometimes if that's brought to light and shared, then it seemed not as bad, but people are going to have their own opinions anyway. So having gone through that, you learn to control what you can control and kind of move on. That's kind of what I did. And, you know, I think I use it as some fuel to, you know, just focus on my game and what I could do.
On a happier note, and I would like to start the episode with the answer, is your wife tweeted out something about players having goal songs. And I would imagine that you guys had the conversation together and you would have picked one. One, I didn't even hear the answer if you have. What was your pick for your goal song?
What did we come up with? I think it was like Dust on the Bottle or something like that. So I don't know. Everything gets sweeter with time. I think that's the one of the lines. So,
all right.
Being an older statesman, I thought it would be good, but who knows? There's always going to be. There you go again. Everybody's going to have opinion, right?
And I had a sillier follow-up question. If you could pick one game in your career where you go back and replay it, which game would it have been?
Oh wow! It would have to be a playoff game.
You can tell me it was a great question to stall.
It
stall
is.
Tactic. You can pat me on the back through the Zoom, actually.
Yeah, geez. It would have to be one of the elimination games that we lost in the Western Conference Finals, either against Vancouver or Chicago. Even Dallas in the second round, we went to like three or four overtimes. And we ended up
talking about those games, who do we have on who was talking about, I think it might have been Bieksa, when he talked about how the team didn't feel confident going into game seven. And RA, didn't you say you mentioned you were in the hallway or something and you could just sense like the Boston room is a lot looser? Going into those games you just described, did you sense like you guys were going to win, or were you guys very nervous in that locker room?
No, I think we were pretty confident in our group. I think at that point, I think, you know, we'd go through the regular season. We had really good, like really good teams. So we were always pretty confident that, you know, that we were going to win. And obviously it's a game of inches at that point in playoffs. And BX's goal was off a stanchion. Nobody knew where the puck was and came back to him. And he was the only one who knew it and shot from the blue line, I think, on the ice and went in. So.
All right, I got another guy I need to ask you about, and that is Jonathan Chichu, because a couple of those years, just some of the best hockey you've ever seen. He was a wild man out there with a sick release. What do you remember about him and Joe's connection and just seeing him get 50 like that, making the game look so easy?
Yeah, it was completely amazing. I think he got him from the slot each and every time. I think probably him and Brett Hall and few other guys who have made their living in that slot, that soft area, made everybody collapse now. Now there's no room in the middle of the ice. But yeah, Jumbo and him had quite the connection. And hit that shot he had, it was like, it was by the goalie's ears each and every time, just perfect. Perfect shots, perfect passes from both those guys was great.
And then you got that Heatley too.
You've
seen a couple guys come in and get the score a few goals.
Yeah. When Heater came in, actually, that's when I was able to play wing on the other side. So Heater was playing right wing. I was Jumbo was middle and I was left. So that was our line in 2010 in the Olympics. So it was pretty, and Danny Boyle was made the team as well. So it was kind of funny. Babs was like, I think who was it? He was either Doughty or Weber was on our power play unit. So he'd send us out. You guys just do what you do. Cause we were, he had our coach at the time was Todd McClellan, so everything was kind of similar teachings. And Todd had just came from Detroit, so we'd be calling our breakouts and the way we set things up.
We'll go back to Babs, but I want to ask you about one of your comments about the middle of the ice closing down, like that slot area. Where have you seen the game gone? Like where do you need to score from now in order to be successful?
Like right in front, you got to get those, rebounds, this and that. But I think also like the goal scorers, obviously like Matthews and Pasternak, they're finding areas that are away from the slot, like way back door or, just different areas that guys aren't covering right now. And they're getting the puck. They're playing with good players that can get them the puck and see the ice really well. So it's definitely gone from right in the middle to backside, out of that home plate, and those guys are good at it.
I wanted to ask about Babcock because I believe that going back to the Twitter thing, I think your wife sent out a tweet on behalf of you. You commented on the fact that you didn't think that he would prevent anyone to reach a certain milestone in games, and essentially defending him. How was your relationship with him, and like? Obviously there was some pretty, gnarly stuff that came out afterward that I'm not down with. How did that all play out?
Yeah. A lot of that came out. And I kind of heard of like talking to Mitch when I first got there, heard things that came out, but Babs was, he was pretty good to me. I think, when I came in, it was definitely when I came in, the Toronto was about, supporting the younger guys, the core guys that they got there. And that was kind of his big focus at that time for me.
Were you bumped out? You weren't able to finish the duration of your 3-year deal there?
Yeah, I think, things obviously didn't go as well in playoffs there. I mean, it was great. The teams there were great. All the friendships, and obviously you guys see it. those are going to be, lifelong friends for me, and that, you can't put a price or anything on that. So that was huge for me. That was fun. It's given me a whole new perspective of what guys have gone through, moving with their families or just moving on their own. All the things you have to learn, all the different routines, and so I think it's made me a better teammate, a better leader, and it's definitely helped me out.
Why do you think you, Austin, and Mitch hit it off, the three is so good? You guys are like the three musketeers instantaneously, and it's kind of rare to see given, the age difference in the league.
Yeah, I don't know. Those guys are just great guys, fun to hang out with. They like, you got Mitch, who's just – I don't think he's ever had a bad day. Probably here or there he has, but he just loves hockey, loves having fun. He's dancing before games and – but they're all business once they step on the ice. And that's what I love about that is that they, people say you can't flip a switch, this and that, but I think, those guys can have fun, but yet once you hit the ice, it game's on. They're going to do their best out there. They're going to play their butts off. And just fun to be around. I think part of me too, selfishly, I wanted to see what they're all about. These guys are highly skilled players, young group, young guys. How did they get so good so fast? And selfishly, I'm trying to steal shit from them.
Keep me in the league a little longer, boys.
Yeah.
After trying to steal some of the stuff, I realized I can't do what they do. So I'm just going to stick with what I know how to do.
I thought you had them around because you didn't want to pay for babysitters. You'd force them to babysit all the time so you and your wife could get some alone.
Oh, maybe, but it's almost like baby. I have to, keep a tabs on them so they don't teach my kids too many bad things. So, it was always great having those guys come over, and that was probably another thing too. Like, sure, I met them at the rink, and then you know, they're good guys to me, this and that. But I think maybe what maybe even took it to another level is once we had them over for dinner, how they got along with their kids and how they, you know, just took a liking to them and played with them. And they weren't like, "Oh, get away from me, you know, go."
Then all of a sudden they're not wearing your jersey anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought you were my fan around here.
Yeah.
So I'm a skate guy. I wore terrible same skates my whole career. And you have, I've always been told there was an issue, right? You wore these Reebok skates forever. No matter what new skate came into the game, you were holding on to these Reeboks. What year did that begin? And what was the whole scenario like when you actually had to switch, when you ran out of pairs?
So I can't remember what year. They came to Mikey Aldrich, our trainer here, and said, "Hey, we only have so many parts left for Patrick's skates." And he's like, "Okay, make as many as you can and ship them all to me." And at that time, Mikey would know better than me. There's probably maybe like 15 pair. So I used to go through probably like four or five pair a year. So at that point, I started cutting it back to like two pair a year. And then like the last couple of years in Toronto there, I was like one and a half, like just trying
to get as much. Right? Kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. But then I think I, you know, doing that, I think I screwed myself in the end. Cause I finally got in last summer, I'd always try and get into new skates, but I finally got into new skates this year and I like them. I love them now. So it's funny how.
Which ones?
You think so? They're CCM. So they, you know, they kind of.
Knew I'd get you with that one.
They did a good job just replicating what I had. And I think they were like, those things were like, everybody would grab my skates. I'm like, "How do you skate with these things? They're like weigh five pounds each." I'm like, "Oh, I don't know. You just get used to them." But I probably screwed myself by just sticking with the same pair. I should have just kept, you know, they always come out with new models. So
You would try the new ones and then just something about them, right? Like you're like, they just don't feel, but what you're saying is true. I bet you, if you just didn't have yours anymore and you had to, if you had no option, it would have been way easier.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, if there'd be like, you'd go out there, you'd play with them in the summer, be playing summer hockey. Oh yeah, they're not bad. But once that training camp started and you're in the corner trying to do a tight turn, you're trying to beat somebody. It's like, shit, I can't do it. So then you just go back to what feels natural.
Well, it's funny that we're on that topic, because I find a lot of the snipers in the league now and guys who are able to sustain that are constantly switching into the new model. Because I think there was a situation this year, and I hope he's not upset that I told the story. Kessel was having a hard time shooting the puck because his sticks that he'd used for so long, I think they stopped making them. And then he ran out. So the jump from how they used to be to like, let's say, 8 years down the road, there's such a difference in the way they all snap now. And if you don't keep adapting, you're going to eventually find a rut.
Yeah, there's so many guys around the league like that. I remember talking about Chichu. Chichu had these sticks, and obviously everybody knew how great they were because he was scoring a ton of goals. But towards one of his last years in San Jose, they stopped making them. And he didn't like it. He was always
there. You go.
Yeah.
Fucks with their heads. Pardon my French. I hope your kids aren't listening.
They might be. Well, they learn a lot of those words through their driving around with their mother. So.
Oh, I thought they were going to Bugsy's day school online or something. We just had Ryan Malone on. He was in Vail with us. Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Patty, I mentioned in the intro, I think you've only missed 31 games in your 22 seasons. What do you attribute your longevity and durability the most to?
Boy, I don't know, just luck, maybe. Yeah. Luck, and then working with the great trainers, I think, training staff. Mike Potenza, strength coach here, has been great. And you gotta have a support team. I mean, I got chiropractors, massage therapists. I got another guy here. He's Toby Hansen, he has his own, it's like it's torture. He like digs his fingers into all these points on your
whoa,
body.
Hey, it's a kid show. There's like, we have young listeners on this. Just be careful.
Biz excited.
So, yeah, it's.
I just cut you off there. Save yourself the headache. I know how media can go these days. I mean, you played in Toronto. You know, if they catch wind, you're talking about this kind of stuff on our pod, man. They're going to have a field day with you.
For sure they will.
Yeah. What do you got, Whit? You got one for him?
Man, how long you want to play, man? It's like you just love the game, huh?
I do. I love it, and I still have a passion for it. Obviously, I'm trying to find that ring so that's still pushing me to play and trying to win that championship and be outstanding to be able to, you know, hoist that Stanley Cup and get that ring. So, but I still have fun doing it. I still love it. Still love the competing out there, and we'll see how long the wife and kids will let me. Right now the kids are older, so they want me to keep going, and that helps a lot.
Hey, you're gonna get to 1999 regular season games, and that pregame skate's gonna screw you out of 2000 games played for a regular season. It's gonna happen. Bernie Nichols.
Yeah. Bernie fucking Nichols.
Hey, Pat, you played in Seattle for 2 years for juniors. They're getting obviously ideally they'll be starting the season after next. How do you think the fans are going to take to the team up there? Is that a city that's been hungry for a franchise?
I think so. I think over the years, like the minor hockey, the Snow Kings, I think they're called, or at least that's what they're called back then, has been growing huge, and they're close. It's right close to Canada too, so I think Vancouver, the border there, and I think they'll do well. I think they're primed for a hockey team there.
I got another one for you. You've been in pretty close to wine country for the better part of 20 something years now. Have you become an enophile in the meantime, or were you already a wine drinker
coming in 18 years old with all these older guys on the team? There was a lot of wine being drank at dinners, and so they were ordering all this wine, Silver Oak, Farniente, Camus. So I got a pretty good education my first few years in the league, and now been able to go up there and get on some wine lists and have a little collection of my own. So I wouldn't say I know a lot about it, but I do enjoy drinking it.
What you go to?
Cake bread, I think, right now. I got the
yellowtail,
the box stuff that's in
we,
the
we use that joke 60 times on this
we
podcast
love it.
Already.
It's one of our favorite jokes.
You just beat the wheels off that yellowtail joke.
Yeah. Well, the baby duck in the box, I think that's what we had growing up.
Man, we've taken a lot of your time. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about? Did you think we were going to ask you about?
No, I came in with an open mind. I had no idea what I was in for. So,
what'd you think? Did you open up more than usual with our show or no?
I don't know. You tell me. I'm supposedly not a talker. Have I been talking pretty well?
Yeah, you've been great.
Absolutely, you've been crushing it.
Yeah,
been great.
We didn't know if you like hated the media folks. So we were like, we'll come in one word answers, like screw these losers.
Just a quiet guy, Biz. He's just like you.
I'm just not a fan when the media turns one thing into something completely opposite.
And, which they can do with anything.
Yeah.
So you're fucked after coming on here.
Oh, you're toast, man. You're hating on the media. Post it, Grinnell. Twitter right now. Marlo calls out Toronto media.
Only the people who do that. So that's there's not a lot out there, right? So there's a few out there that'll do that, but not a lot.
Okay, I have to ask you this, actually. This one just popped to my mind. What do you make of the whole Brian Burke O'Connell situation? Have you heard about that one?
No.
Regarding the Joe Thornton trade?
Oh, yeah, I did vaguely, I read that.
how about Berkey challenging O'Connell to Donnybrook?
The second GM.
You love that. You're old school. Come on.
Yeah, that's, haven't seen that come out. That would have changed, everything, or, like, changed so much for me personally, if Joe didn't come here. It would have been, who knows what would happen.
That would have cost you a lot of money.
It would have cost me a lot of money, a lot of gold. Yeah.
So thanks to O'Connell. You should be Team O'Connell then.
Pat, t-shirt made up.
Was the team quietly hoping some night Joe actually did score four goals?
I think so. Yeah. I think what was it? A couple of years ago, he had three, and everybody, I think, was just feeding him the puck left and right, trying to get him that fourth one.
You know he's a man of his word, too.
Oh, I'm just thinking of random stuff right now. Was it true that you used to get completely undressed between periods and jump in the cold tub?
Yeah, every time? Between the second and third, I do that.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Do you dunk or just the legs?
Just depends how hot I am. I'll get up. Get into like up to the nipples, but guy who dunk all the time was Heatley. Heatley would come in the morning. He'd have a huge like rock star energy drink. He'd sit in the hot tub for a little bit, and he'd be drinking that, and then he'd get out, jump in the cold tub, and do a complete one or two dunks, and get out and go ready for practice.
Oh man, that was worth the rock star soundbite, man. Talking and you talking about nipples. Post that one too, Grinnell. That'll get the people buzzing. We'll get an extra 100,000 clicks because of that. What else? I was gonna say, because you're such normally a quiet guy, what seems like that, like probably in the locker room. Who were some of the funnier guys that were louder in the locker room that you like loved? Like you thought, oh my god, this guy's pure comedy every day.
There's probably too many to list, but one I'm thinking of right now is that I really enjoyed being around was Tori Mitchell. Demers in Phoenix is good.
Oh, yeah. he's a character.
Yeah. When I first came in the league, I'd say Marty McSorley and Dodie Wood, they would go after each other all day long. And it was comedy to watch the one-liners. Sean Burr was in there, too, with them. But there's always, you know, a couple of guys that are just comedy to be around, and you love being around.
What type of banter between McSorley and I forgot the other name you said, what type of stuff? Like, give me a typical morning conversation between these two idiots.
Dodie would go, hey, Marty, do you want some tape? You know, some sock tape, white tape, rack of lamb.
It's like the same one-liners over and over, loving it.
Yeah.
What? One of the teammates I want to mention, Mark Edward Vlasic. Was he, did you think, one of the most unheralded defensemen of, say, the last 10 years in the league?
Yeah, he could be. Obviously, playing that defensive style for most of his career. I mean, he can score the goals here and there and do some offensive work, but obviously playing against the other team's top lines night in and night out and being here in San Jose has probably gone under the radar for quite some time. But obviously the hockey guys, the hockey gurus or people who pick all these, the Team Canada and teams like that, they always have them on the squad. So it goes to show you that, it is appreciated.
They know how good he is.
I got a silly question. Yeah. Was it weird skating out of a shark head for the first time? Were you like, this is kind of stupid?
I've always wanted to do that.
Yeah, or were you like, this is awesome, I'm coming out of a shark head?
Yeah, I think it was that one. It's awesome coming out of it. I think, at that point, I don't think anybody else was doing it. Now you look around the league, everybody's kind of got some take on it, and I think it's pretty cool.
And that Metallica song is just bumping. Oh, what's the name of that song, Biz?
Don't, no clue. Don't have the slightest.
Do you know Marlo? No chance.
Fuel?
Yeah. No, maybe it's not Fuel? His country song for his goal song.
Yeah, that was a brutal answer. Country, dude, what's wrong with you? Yeah. Are you a big country guy? Well, yeah, you're from Sask, right?
I never used it. I never got to play it before I left. So I'll have to come up with something new, I think.
Did you meet those guys, the Metallica guys?
Yeah, they come into the locker room every now and then, so it was pretty good. His kid was playing with the Junior Sharks, so it was pretty cool to meet him.
Yeah. Oh, awesome.
Yeah, they're a San Fran-based band, aren't they, from that neck of the woods?
Yeah, they come to quite a few games. Neil Young comes to the games, too. It's pretty cool to see him.
Patty's like, I actually had them play my kid's fifth birthday. It was a little aggressive, but hey, it was, they did it for free.
things started to get broken when they started playing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Pat, we can't thank you enough for joining us. I know you guys are bored out of your mind right now, so we appreciate a bunch of you coming on and having a chat with us. And hopefully we'll see you on the ice soon, brother. We're really hoping for that.
All right. I really enjoyed this. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Pat.
Our pleasure.
Good luck, buddy.
Huge thanks to Patrick Marleau for joining us a couple weeks ago. Great talking to him. Dude's, like I said, probably going to be in the Hall of Fame. Always a pleasure to get those veterans on. Biz, I know you had something for us.
Well, I was going to organically transition this ad read, but I think that after last episode's transition, RA is feeling a little bit threatened. So here we go.
Hey guys, it's Big Cat, and Fight Week is here. Rough and Rowdy 24 invades Clarksburg, West Virginia this Friday night, April 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern. For the first time since Rough and Rowdy 1, every single fight will be a brand new brawler, and we found the wildest hillbillies the holler has to offer. Order now to enjoy 20 amateur matchups with no headgear, plus our live ring girl contest after the final bell. These country roads are being paved with blood and grit and balls. Join me and Dave on the call for Rough and Rowdy 24 this Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. Witness all the chaos with pay-per-view replay available all weekend long on buyrnr.com. That's buyrnr.com.
Phase 3 coming Thursday.
2B.
But not 2B. Good stuff with Patrick Marleau.
Funny to hear him mention that he wishes he got into the newer wheels earlier, because that was a grind that we talked about many times in the spas. When the Reeboks ran out, Patty was donezo. So he's finally switched. But I was interested to hear about that, because I'm a former shitty skate guy.
So he was talking about Joe and how he helped him when he moved over. I actually filmed something. I didn't know Joe Thornton was down with the content, but Budweiser ended up talking him in. Me, him, and Burnsy filmed something with a guy named Matt Dean Pettit. He's a chef, and they did a burger cook-off against each other. It was cool. Burnsy, I'm not saying that. You're gonna have to watch it for yourself.
I thought it came out already.
Burnsy was on his 400 acre ranch, and Joe Thornton was at his place in San Jose with a beautiful view, and it was cool. Joe's like the man, and he was.
Burnsy won because he killed the cow, and then he got the meat, and then like he literally made the burger.
Spoiler, gets a little gory with the Budweiser content, but no, but it was cool. I didn't feel like throwing out the "Hey, come on, check out sometime," because I didn't want to get denied. They say never talk to your idols. So maybe we can get him on one day. I think he would be such an interesting guy, and everything has great things to say about him, including Patty Marleau.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully someday. And that should probably wrap it up for this one, I'd say, boys. I would say tune in to all our social channels. We got a lot of good stuff dropping this week, as we've been doing all summer. Grinnelli's been busting his hump, doing a lot of good stuff behind the scenes. So check that out. And we will see you Thursday morning. As always, we'd like to say thanks to our awesome sponsors. Big thanks to our longtime friends at New Amsterdam Vodka and Pink Whitney. Big thanks to our friends at Death Wish Coffee. Been keeping me going for the last couple weeks. Big thanks to our friends at Roman Swipes. Taking care of the fellas out there, no doubt. And a big thank you to everyone at Bud Light. Make sure to check them out if for some reason you haven't yet. Have a great week. Catch you Thursday. There might be a little dust on the bottom. It's one of those things that gets sweeter with time.